Welcome to episode 5 of The Ski Show.
We're back. Excited to be back as always. It's becoming a tradition, Tuesday night again.
Here we are. Tuesday used to be Hugo School for me. Now it's a ski slope.
Ski slope and post Sarah coming and cleaning my apartment.
That's true, too. We've timed this well. It's all worked out.
It's a clean ski slope.
Beautiful. Lemony smelling, too.
By the way, if anybody listening has a photograph of the ski slope, we'd like it. We did see one that Mary Lupo.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you very much.
Much better than the one Popkin put up, which I think is a tree stump.
Speaking, Popkin is our guest, as hopefully some of you know. And we're going to find out what that really was a picture of, because it didn't look to me at all like it was what I remember that area to look
like. I was thinking it was totally overgrown, and that was just the remnant of it. And then when I saw Mary's picture, it seemed as though, I don't know if that much of a change could have occurred in 3 years.
Yeah, that's not overgrown. Yeah, 3 years, definitely not. No. Definitely not. So excited to have Steve on, as I posted. It's our first contemporary. Steve was an L.A.er with us. When did he start? Do you know?
Inters.
That's late. Talk about starting late.
Well, it's funny. We talked about that with Krause last time. And we were saying we don't know who else would have joined that late and had such an impact in camp. And you know what? I think the guy we have coming on tonight actually is the guy.
Krause had an impact as well.
Krause did.
You can't deny that.
Definitely did. I mean, I wasn't in Swago during his time, but Moss used to tell the story, so he clearly was.
I looked up what the opposite of soft is. Nah, this is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. And they're all bad words.
Is it hard?
It's beyond just hard, it's abrasive, coarse. It's all things, if you applied that to somebody's personality,
right,
you would not want to be them.
Okay.
So I think soft has way more positive connotations than negative.
Okay.
I don't think he meant it that way. I don't know what the fuck he meant, to be perfectly honest.
You're bringing this up. We haven't discussed this, so you're bringing it up now, and it's like...
I shouldn't be bringing it up?
No, it's fine. It's totally fine that you do. And, when it was happening, I was like, all right, I guess it's just a riff. I guess he's just going off, and this is going to... Yeah, exactly. And it's not going to be as bad when I hear it back. And then I listened one time back to it, and I was like...
It was bad.
I was like, what is he doing? I'm like, yeah, I felt really bad listening to it. I mean, not bad where I couldn't go to sleep or anything like that, but I'm cringing as I'm listening to it. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, I've treated this guy with complete kindness, and he comes in here, and there was no context for it. It wasn't like we were riffing on each other.
See, I think that's just his way of misstating. And I don't...
But I thought you gave him ample opportunity to sort of correct himself and further define the word, and he kept refusing to do so.
That's Krause, though.
Okay.
Well, let me just tell you something. When we left... So he wanted to go out. And I'm like, but Bobby, come on, or Robert. I don't know which. What are you allowed to call him?
Anything but Bob, I think, okay. Works.
So I'm like, oh, I'm tired. We go out. He convinces me, and I was pleased, to go to this place called Mission Chinese, which I'd never been to. We got there. It's 10:30 at night. There's an hour wait. I'm like, Bob, I'm a fucking waiting an hour. It's 10:30. I'm tired. Okay. But that's not the key.
More power to you on a Tuesday yet.
Yeah, so we're walking down the street, and there's a couple that we get in front of. And he turns to me, he goes, those guys, hold on a second. And he goes back, and he just goes right in the face of the couple, not your first date, right? This isn't a first date.
First call.
We're going to pause. We'll be back.
We're back. Hopefully you enjoyed our new recall bugle.
Nice. So back to my story. So we're walking down the street, and there's this couple, and he just gets up in their face and is like, you two aren't together. You two aren't on a first date.
How old is this couple?
At least late 20s, okay. So early 30s. Yeah. Do we have a visitor?
We do.
There's a visitor in the house.
It looks very much like you.
He does. Let's see what he looks like. Who could this visitor be? Here he is, Burke Harrison Pearlstein is
welcome.
In the house. Say hello.
Old men and their toys are disturbing.
Okay, well, we'll move on to that.
As he cuts us to pieces.
So Bob is just in their face, and I'm like embarrassed.
Just the first date thing?
He just won't stop talking to them.
And they don't know how to react because it's such a verbal sucker punch. You're like, what are you doing?
He just is so, right, off guard, in your face. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, God, why am I with him? Now, these poor people, not only was he in their face for the whole block, it was the longest block in Manhattan. It was 5th Avenue to 6th Avenue. And I'm just like, oh, I'm sorry. And he's like, oh, what are you, an apologist for me? And I'm like, oh, no, you're attaching me to your nonsense.
It's uncomfortable.
Exactly. And he doesn't realize that. He doesn't realize that.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean,
there's no. He's not the litmus test.
No, you know, yeah. Don't come on here and litmus test me. Just be nice and friendly, and
so
we'll share some laughter and tales and have a good time.
There we go.
All right.
On that note.
All right.
We'll take a pause.
Later.
So anyway, here we are back. I'm excited. Now we are. Well, this is going to be a big night, actually. Yes.
Looks like it may be bigger than we thought.
It might be bigger than we thought, and we might be talking about 66.7% of L8 in 1980.
Excluding counselors.
One, two, what was our last year?
1980,
okay. Yeah, excluding counselors, campers. Nice.
Jake, if you want to call in, because I think Eddie Mormon Young, might be coming by tonight as well. What was the word? You spoke to him on the phone. He was getting in his car and going?
I was keeping it a secret, but Eddie Mormon Young is on his way in. He's on his way in from Long Island.
Were you keeping it a secret?
Well, we were just being vague about who the Beyond Popkin was coming, but no, there's no need to be a secret.
There's our first call again. A lot of breaks tonight.
It's going to be Steve Popkin.
Okay,
sit tight.
Back on episode 5, Ski Slope, special guest in the house.
Stephen Popkin.
Here he is.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.
Good to have you with us.
Excellent to have you.
It's great to be here. It's such a professional podcast operation.
Coming from you. You're the guy who I'd most want that comment from, so thanks.
It's true. There was any person when you were 13 or 14...
When I was 49.
...that you would think would have knowledge of like mixers and things like we're using right now, it would be Stephen Popkin.
Absolutely.
Well, let's put the credit where the credit's due. WSGO. Yeah. That's the first time I was on the radio.
Keith McCoy. Well, what equipment did they have? Did they have
We had a
turntables.
We had two Technics turntables, not 1200s, but the direct drive version. And they had a basic mixer. It might have been Gemini mixer, which I might have used once or twice before I went to camp. And they had a 10-watt broadcasting transmitter, which I think Keith McCoy stole from Brooklyn College or one of the sub Brooklyn colleges.
Right.
But it
Brooklyn
was
College,
a true pirate radio operation. It was completely illegal.
Was it?
Yeah, based on what I know.
I thought like our transmission strength was so low that it didn't matter.
That's what he said. But he took it from a college radio station.
It truly didn't make it. It did
theft.
Not make it from the Nature Shack to L.A.
No, you could barely hear it across
You
the
couldn't camp. Hear it across the camp.
No.
So I cannot imagine.
Once you
that
got
there
to the other side
problems.
Of the outdoor court, you were done. You
in
couldn't
camp,
hear it anymore.
You couldn't hear it?
So you were basically.
You couldn't hear it in our bunk from the.
So effectively.
I don't think so.
You might have just played some records in your own room and you would have been doing the same thing.
Right.
No, what about
since there was no one that could actually listen to WSGO.
But there was
the Crocs were in bed. They weren't even allowed
You know what? Even if it was complete fiction and there was no transmission at all,
just the
thought that you were broadcasting.
You know, it was a real station, you know, setup wise. I mean, I'll be
how many people really had an interest in that? I didn't have
only
any.
The guy broadcasting.
The people DJing.
Yeah.
Exactly.
How many was that? It was the two of you, I think, and maybe five other kids.
We couldn't have covered it all. There must have been some other kids.
You did people favors, though. You would like you'd know when you had a show, so you would ask your friends to listen.
No,
to
you're right. I remember Grubby's jazz show. That was awesome.
Didn't you also mention that Jeff Gottlieb was on the radio or something?
I think
no
that's
one could find him, but he was DJing.
Yeah, I think that's what so made me a color war leader.
That was
I couldn't
the
have
worst show ever.
Me and Eddie couldn't have monopolized it all, but we definitely did know all the long record songs. That he could
Who
go
so
out of the shack?
I mean, I'm jumping into something, but. You know, you definitely were the one who introduced me, and I know Howie, to a diverse set of independent music, alternative music. Who got you, just curious as a starting point, how did you find alternative, how did you find the bands that you were into back in that day?
The first band I ever heard of that nature was the Sex Pistols. Now, how I heard of them is funny. Is from Ed Asner on the People's Choice Awards.
That's where it starts.
Remember the People's Choice Awards?
Yeah, of course.
Well, don't they still exist?
Possibly?
Are they gone? Yeah.
I don't know. But back then it was a big deal.
So does Ed Asner.
He was the host.
Ed Asner's like the,
and they had the
super
award
liberal,
the,
silly guy.
How's he still alive?
But he wasn't
like pushing back then.
He was, you know, against it. And they got the award of the most hated band or the most disgusting band or something
of really?
Nature.
So you were just as.
I was like I got to find out about
this band. A subversive kind of kid. You're like, I got to know about them.
Right. I found out about it by going to a record store.
Right.
There was no other way back then. Getting the record and just playing it over and over again. And then, of course, the Sex Pistols at that point would hit the news occasionally.
Right.
You know, by 78, they toured America.
So this is 77. You're getting into this stuff.
I think.
76.
When I first bought the record.
So you were into this stuff before Elvis even actually started.
Before any of the bands. Mm-hmm. They were the first punk band. Before them, it was very, it was like pub rock.
What really was the Clash's first year? 77, 78?
77, I would say. 76, but I'd say the first album was 77. But the first album in America was their second album.
So Ed Asner,
yes,
comments on these guys.
And, it was,
and you're
disgusting.
Just like, oh, I want to fucking,
he's
see
like,
what it is.
He's like, this is disgusting. This is filthy.
Oh, he wasn't.
They didn't win the
he
award for
in?
The best.
Yeah,
band.
He obviously wasn't into
but
it.
But Ed being liberal and Mr.
Well, yeah,
support the Sandinistas, I thought he would have been he'd been into it.
Yeah, did you just see Ed Asner like in his grumpy old man with the bushy eyebrows talking about the Sex Pistols? It's just funny. It's a funny thought.
Disgusting. They
I could see that.
They are the most hated band in the country. They win the People's Choice for whatever it was. The most disgusting.
It's great
band.
Marketing, right? Well,
yeah, it was great marketing.
Kid and Merrick picks up on it. And it's like, oh, let me check this out.
So that's the Pistols are the first.
Then I went to the record store. Right. Probably was a regular store back then, a Crazy Eddie or Sam Goody or Disco Matt.
Disco Matt.
Bought the record, and then I listened to it every day.
So you just love Nevermind the Bollocks. Their
For
only
every day,
that's
sure.
their only album, right?
That's their only album yeah. that was really official. They had a second album that came out, which was, you know, The Great Rock and Roll Swindle, which, you know, had like a third of an album's worth of good material on it.
It was like
I listened to it every day, especially before school. I would get up at 7:30 and blast it, the whole album. You know, it was like 35 minutes. Go to school.
That is the whole length of it, right? It's the like
every
2 minute songs. They're so
I
fast.
I make CDs now for the car. Psychedelic Furs, you know, right. First two albums fit on one CD, 80 minutes, you know.
And they had long songs.
Yeah, India's half
they
of
just
that.
Didn't have half. Right. Yeah, India takes the first intro to that song is like takes 15
but
minutes.
But still, it was 10 songs or 8 songs. So even if it was long, it was still like 38 minutes.
Right.
You know, there was like a kind of a roadblock on longer than 45 minutes at the time. 40 minutes was the average album. So and that was punk, so of course that was
so short. Once you got into that, it just steamrolled from there.
Well, then I probably the next, I mean, after that I heard of the Dead Boys because they had the album. It was called Young, Loud, and Snotty. And with that title, I was like,
I don't know that. I don't even know that one.
That was the second punk album that I ever heard of.
The Dead Boys,
Steve Baters. And the album was called Young, Loud, and Snotty. And of course, you know, that appealed to me, you know, as alternativeness and, you know, punk and whatever. And there was no other bands. I never heard of the Ramones until I went to Camp Swago in 1976.
Well, wait. Because when you came to Swago, like I remember, and you started as an intro, right?
Yes.
Okay.
What year was that?
78.
Okay.
And when you came, like you already had like a musical influence, but it wasn't necessarily with like the punk movement. It was more, what I remember at least, was Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Right.
And Meatloaf. Like his either first or second album.
Those
were big cassettes at the time.
Before I was into punk. I like some progressive stuff, like ELP and Jethro Tull, you know. And of course, before that, classic rock, Led Zeppelin.
I pretended to like ELP.
So, no, I like.
I did not even pretend.
No, I really liked them. I saw them in Nassau College.
And everyone would go on. Oh, did you see the drummer? He goes upside down. I'm like, I couldn't care less.
The keyboardist, like,
or whoever
it's
was.
Like, there's like three good songs, keyboard. But the rest.
And
of it is
no
just
offense to our good friend Jake. But Jake
he's
loved them.
He did.
Jake loved them.
Well,
he
a good
they
thing
so
about
good.
Swago was Mike Moss, who was into all those bands.
He's like, yeah, there's
he
nobody
was
he didn't
UK.
Like.
UK. Mm-hmm. That was Mike Moss's big band.
Which band?
UK.
Who was UK? What is that?
It was Bill Bruford.
It was Bill Bruford from like...
he was from King Crimson.
Yeah.
It was an offshoot of King Crimson, basically. Eddie Jobson on violin. It was a trio.
Totally violin never drums. Heard of it.
Yeah, he used to play it for me. I learned about it from him. And then when I saw the show in Nassau, it was ELP... UK was the opener.
No.
But he was into also that jazz fusion.
You know, it would be easy to just, so you got into like the Pistols and then that, like the, I'm sure you, I know you ran with like the whole British punk thing, which we all loved. But you didn't stop there. Like your interest is so much more diverse than that. Like even like this whole thing we do with the Earl Chin. And,
right.
and you know, like
right.
that was totally
well, you know,
cool.
Funny.
Why don't you just, someone tell what that was. Well, you tell. I don't know. What was that
well,
exactly?
Earl Chin was a DJ that was on WHBI.
HBI, that's what it was.
WHBI
we couldn't think of it.
Newark.
Thrown out
in Newark,
I know
right?
W's the first
It was a kind of station where you could rent it by the hour. So it was all different ethnic people would rent their own show for like 3 hours and then sell their own ads. So it could be like Polish music. They had a lot of like Eastern European stuff. But starting around 8 or 9 or 10, it turned to reggae. And there was another DJ on before Earl Chin, this guy, Gil Bailey.
I don't
he
remember.
He was Jamaican. But then Earl Chin would start at like 11 or 12. I can't remember exactly, but probably 12.
What did we listen to, Senior? Did you have tapes of that?
Well, I had him on 8-track.
8-track tape.
Now, right, I discovered Earl Chin around the same time as the Pistols. I was in junior high school. And you guys could relate to this because, you know, you listen to the radio, or especially listen to the radio back then, late night. So you just kind of turn the dial as you're turning it. Down listen low. To what you hear.
It's so true. You were just, if you'd be somewhere like not in your hometown in the city,
the
like what the fuck am I going to find? Is anything going to actually
particularly
come
under
in?
90? Like, right, that's sort of
right,
like
where
the,
you get
the
like the
college
stuff.
Yeah. Especially in like Florida, you'd go down there, like visit your grandparents, and it was all this Cuban.
You would just roll. You'd sit there with your eyes closed, and just move the dial, Haitian, and hope something Cuban. Good would come up.
Right.
So one day I was doing that. This is around seventh grade, I think, at the latest eighth grade, and I'm getting to that. And I'm just hear this guy who with Jamaican voice and who was talking in gibberish, and then also with a lot of echo. You know, it was just Earl Chin.
He liked his reverb.
Yeah, so much reverb and echo. And I really barely knew what reggae was. At the same time I learned about the Pistols, I learned about reggae because Peter Tosh was on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
You could date that. I don't know what
with
it was.
With Jagger, right?
And the Jagger came out.
I remember that.
And it was probably 77 as a guess. And the next day I went to the record store. I didn't even know who Bob Marley was. You know? None of us did.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the record store and I said, I saw this guy on Saturday Night Live, but Mick Jagger came out. That was, of course, interesting me. And he goes, Peter Tosh, you got to buy this album, Bush Doctor, you know, which was the album that had that song on it. And then at the same time, or maybe like a week later, I rode my bike back there again. And I said, now I need more of this kind of music. And he sold me Babylon by Bus, Bob Marley. Mm-hmm. I never heard of Bob Marley. I don't think anyone did.
No, he wasn't big back in the day. It's funny, yeah.
Really? And he's like ubiquitous.
But
now,
he's heard of Peter
now.
Tosh.
It's like everyone who's into any type of music knows like Bob Marley.
Like,
you know?
See, if you could sort of judge, and I don't know now, but like when CDs were CDs, like which CD would have been played more than any other in the world?
So many people
Bob
like
Marley's Legend.
I agree.
Legend would be my, pick.
CDs of all time.
Right, right.
All over.
If you can count the rotations of a
CD.
Even
your parents might have had in their car, too.
Exactly.
Right.
Like, oh, I love reggae. Look, I have
any interest in any music.
It sold the most. It's probably the highest selling CD of all time.
Right.
Really?
Or was
Legend?
Or at least it's the most played, because somebody has their summer barbecue party and they're like, what I put on? It's like, oh, let me put on some reggae. I really like reggae. And it's always that one disc.
Right.
There's no one disc that defines a whole area of music.
That's reggae. Oh, it's Bob Marley's one album.
Well, so listening to Earl Chin at that young age, and you know how many
it was crazy.
What he talked about. He had Bob Marley on his
We love that. I love that.
Was Paul's Boutique, like on the Beastie Boy album, was Paul's Boutique one of the advertisers on Earl Chin?
There was that. I
don't
know.
What do you? Because I have a memory of that.
Yeah, like, I do. Because it sounds like
Beastie
on,
Boys on one of their records used something from WHBI, which I think was a world famous Supreme Team.
Nah.
It was a DJ combo, and that was also they were used in Malcolm McLaren. If you listen to Malcolm McLaren's music now, you listen to all the radio drops are all from WHBI, from the world famous Supreme Team. Okay. They were like one of the first hip hop DJs, which I heard, you know, at the same time. It all crossed over right there because just think of it. Sex Pistols, Malcolm McLaren was their manager. He's playing hip hop and reggae right off of WHBI, you know, right off of this most obscure station that you can't even remember the name of it, but yet it was so influential in the Clash. Sandinista also have a cut from WHBI.
And their Bond shows, they had Grandmaster Flash open for them, and they had it was like violent.
You
it was like people were throwing bottles at them.
What's the relevance of Grandmaster Flash?
That you know, hip hop and
oh, just the crossover,
And Malcolm McLaren basically, this is what happened from what I read over the years is that Malcolm McLaren went up to Harlem, you know, because he's British and he's a tourist, and he's like, I got to go up to Harlem to see this thing that's happening there. Not even hip hop, just. You know,
right.
The ethnicness and the Apollo really is more of the draw, especially back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up there to 125th Street, and he sees Afrika Bambaataa, who's selling records on the street, and Afrika Bambaataa is wearing a Sex Pistols T-shirt up there, because Afrika Bambaataa really had his head in a lot of worlds, Kraftwerk and the UK British stuff, and then that was it. That was a meeting of the minds right there. And he said, "You're my DJ," and then they started doing these shows over at the Roxy, not far from here. And then the whole crossover happened, you know, Buffalo Gals and all that stuff. It was all early hip-hop. If you hear people like Kid Rock or Eminem, probably more likely, they say, oh, the first time I heard scratching was Buffalo Gals because that song had so much scratching in it.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, there was no scratching in the record. Maybe the next record was Herbie Hancock's Rocket, but that was already a couple years later.
Planet Rock was Afrika Bambaataa, too, right? That
was
later on.
It wasn't like scratching.
Mm-hmm.
Planet Rock was Afrika Bambaataa, you know, to this day. It was the biggest. But he was discovered by Malcolm, and you know, it crossed over. If you watch your Malcolm McLaren videos, you know, it's all Africa Bambaataa, world famous Supreme Team, the Rocksteady crew, you know, the breakdancers are all over those videos. And then in like, if you wait 2 more years later, Madonna.
And when we were second year seniors, I don't really recall hip hop like being part of anything.
It wasn't. It wasn't.
It was nothing right at that point.
At that era, it was just.
I would tell you the album that I remember the most. I remember the Earl Chin shit, the tapes that you know, well, I loved.
I want to make one point about Earl Chin, because I think that's, it was pre-talk radio that we got into it, but it started, I think, the cycle of listening to something as you'd go to sleep, because that stuff was on the 8 tracks, and that was the stuff you'd throw on, like at 11:30.
So there were two things, what I was getting at, that would be on at night that I just remembered always. The Earl Chin tapes,
I know what you're gonna say.
And the first Psychedelic Furs album, man. That was unanimous. I still love that album.
Well, I'll tell you the story how I got that album, because no one ever heard of those guys, including me.
Well, then they were really different on the first album than actually any other album that followed.
True.
Just that saxophone thing taking over the first
album. It was
different.
They got more produced and stuff, but it still was the same guy. You know, I've been listening to the albums lately, and it's still the same thing.
I still listen to that album. It's so
memorable.
I
took a break, but I've been listening to the first four albums lately. Mm-hmm.
What's the third one? I know the second
Forever Now.
I don't know. I know what it looks like, but I can't give you the
name. Forever Now, I believe is the name.
All right, anyway. So how'd you come to that?
My friend Andy used to work at Record World at Roosevelt Field.
Right.
And somehow he was in charge of the import section. I think mainly so he could like steal the records. So he would always like steal.
Found his way to that position. So he
somehow he would, because those are the best records to steal, you know. Because they cost $10, where a regular record costs like $4, for example. And we really couldn't afford that. We couldn't afford $10 for one record, you know, back then. So I was going to camp, you know, like within 2 weeks or whatever. I went to the store to buy some records, you know, maybe I had $20. And I'm looking through the record, the import section, which was Gem Records. I don't know if you remember the sticker.
I do.
It used to be on
Imports
Records. Yep. They imported. They were a company in New Jersey. They bought all the stuff from England, sold it to record stores. The Psychedelic Furs album was not out in America, just like many albums back then, only came out in England. They weren't big enough, or they waited to see what would happen. They throw this.
Right.
Record companies guys say, we throw the stuff against the wall, and then we see what sticks.
Mm-hmm.
What sticks is where we make our money, and what falls is where we get our losses, you know, our tax loss from. So this record was not out yet. It was maybe in May I bought it. We went to camp in June, or, you know, I bought it in June, and we went to camp in late June. And then I only bought it for the name of the band and the picture. I never heard of the band.
It was just that black judging with the four guys' heads sort of white, like in the green writing.
It was like a shadowy picture, and the name was Psychedelic, even though you kind of knew it wasn't like Psychedelic. It wasn't like a Grateful Dead.
No, it wasn't like multicolor.
It wasn't pink.
No, it was punk. Right. You kind of knew it was punk because of their haircuts.
They're British. Like
Richard Butler really, you know, had a punk look, certainly. And I was like, I want this record, but it was too much money out of my budget. My friend said, don't worry. You buy these four records, you spend your 20, and I'll slip it in the bag for you. When you leave, and
it always works out.
Yeah, it was a great deal, and he had it worked out that way.
It's amazing that Andy did
that's
that.
That's how he stole the records.
Get into it.
Put them in the bag, gave you a receipt, stapled it, and then, you know, it was no question.
And then the cop from Roosevelt Field chased you down.
He got caught.
Did he?
He got caught, and then he ratted out his friends.
Even pre-having video cameras, the dude got caught.
Because he got greedy, and then he started, like, putting out crates of records out.
It's always that way, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You know, one's
I think it
never
was cassettes.
Enough.
It was blank cassettes. He would put out, like, four boxes of Mike Sells in the garbage, you know? But the worst part is he
put it in
turned
the garbage. Very creative.
He told the cop this. It was just the Record World cop, luckily.
Record World.
Yeah, they were of their own patrol.
Somehow they did. Record World was a big deal.
Are they allowed to be armed? Yes, the Record World cops.
Record World prisons as well. If you get
so
caught.
I get a call one day at my house, and they said, well, "We have Andrew in custody."
He custody.
Says, wait, is the call to your house?
Yes.
Oh, who answers the phone? Really you are a parent.
Why would they be calling you?
He told. Somehow he ratted us out, but he was the mastermind. I don't know how you could, like, could Bernie
he was the
Madoff,
guy
like,
behind it. And
could Bernie Madoff get off by telling that his other people under him did it, you know?
That's absurd.
It was absurd.
Even if you were complicit in it, it's...
He was older than me also. He actually was old enough to have a job and a car.
Right. Well,
he was
just to be charged with a crime, maybe.
So they called up and they said, do you know your son was involved in a ring stealing records? And I was like,
A ring.
Yeah.
A crime.
The
ring.
RICO charges are coming his way.
There was three other friends maybe involved.
They're stealing every British
there was four
album
people involved,
that's out there.
I was one of them and Andy was the other one. The other guys, I won't say their names. But luckily, I was right.
I believe the statute of limitations has expired.
And the thing is, I bet Andy assisted a lot of these bands becoming popular by sliding these guys the albums. Like, Andy probably
Napster. Andy was the Napster,
right?
Of 1980, whatever. So,
yeah,
70, whatever.
Yeah, it was 78 or something. And certainly it's true because of the psychedelic furs. Think about it.
Nah, of course.
We heard it, and then when we went to see them, it was only like 200 people that ever heard of them.
Right.
And then suddenly, 4 years
that,
later.
That night, you know, we talked about it in the first episode. Was so memorable for us on a number of levels, but those fucking band was good.
It was an amazing show.
It was a great show. It started at like 2 a.m. I remember also. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but
it was the first time that we ever
all connected. Yeah,
right. It felt very adult
because
you know?
It was right after camp.
Right.
It was like a month later.
Right.
So second we hit New York and saw like Good Times or whatever, The Voice, we saw the show. I remember I bought the tickets. I don't know if it was more than just the four of us with Eddie.
I think it was just
the four of us. That's all I remember. And by the way, few minutes away to Eddie Mormon Young joining us here on the podcast.
He may show up. He's an unconfirmed special guest.
No, he called us. Did I tell you? Yeah, he called us. No, he's confirmed. He just didn't want to overstep his bounds, and he felt that
he's overstepped his boundaries that I invited him like four different times.
I'm like,
times.
Well, Howie and I would love to have you if Steve invited you. I think that
three different times I invited
he'd
him.
He'd love for you to be on. Phone call. So he's going to come, and you're going to have to ask questions for him like you did in Calicoon.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he won't talk as much.
That's
as
not
me.
What's going to happen.
He won't talk as much as me.
All right. Well, anyway, he's on his way.
But I like Krause, though. You got Krause really talking. That guy was.
We don't need to get Krause talking.
He came in. He was all prepared. He had like notes and that
one. Kissing story. That was good.
That was good, right?
The which story?
French kissing story was good.
Yeah, I agree.
That was a good story.
Yeah, we
had a good time with Bob.
I have some good stories for Swego girl stories.
Go, man. You know, it's funny because maybe I'll lead you into one. I remember one time. I think you're the only guy I know that actually got a girl in our bunk.
Really?
Am I right
From
about
what
that?
I heard, I was the only guy that ever got a girl into the boys' bunk.
Not even our year.
Not that I, at that time, according to like Gottlieb or whatever.
Gottlieb was keeping
years.
The books on
this
that.
This is L.A. and you got a girl into
LA.
Our bunk.
I'll give the story, but as you know, though, we would go to the girls' bunks.
Well, if
you were lucky.
I don't really remember being in the girls.
Well, I was in
sort of neutral territory on the
I think on every podcast
on
I've had to admit that nothing happened for
from
me
what
at Camp
I remember,
Swega.
Alan Perlstein had the best looking girlfriend.
That doesn't mean I was getting anywhere with him.
And then Eddie had his pseudo girlfriend, Deva. She was one of the cutest.
That's right. Eddie loved Deva.
That's right.
They had an infatuation. They were almost boyfriend.
Deva's a cute girl.
She was so cute.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She
still is to this day.
She looks exactly the same.
Props to you.
You look fantastic. Yeah. So.
And her daughters look just like her, too. You know? So,
well, I don't think we need to go there.
I hit my mic.
I got Howie a little flustered. Let's not do the daughter thing.
No, you know what? I hit my mic.
It's all about Facebook. You know?
I remember one time, this is back in the Electric Peace Orchestra days, and hopefully we'll get to that. This is where I'm jamming with Steve and his merry guys like in 87.
Yep. Yep.
And I wake up one morning in your house in the basement. I walk up to the kitchen, and there's Deva, like with your sister, I think. Like they were friends independently of any
Deva
sort of Swego Sitona thing.
My sister went to college together at the University of Hartford.
Really?
And I've seen them hanging out.
Did your sister go to Swetona?
No, she went to Camp Kindering.
Where my ex-wife went.
This is going to bring me back to
my
how
son's
I
mother
to
went
Swago.
To Kindering. Interesting. Yeah.
Okay. And then we got to get back to the girl in the bunk thing.
We got to get back to music because I wanted to.
We're going
to get a lot to talk about.
7 hours, right? When it's somebody from our year.
How far in are we already?
We are
25 minutes.
21 minutes in.
It flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. So you got to ask me how I got to Swago. That's the official question.
Steven, how'd you get to Swago?
I went to Camp Kindering. I started off
so you went to Kindering.
I went to
Kindering.
Oh,
you fooled around with my ex-wife?
Well, she born in 64?
She's born in 66.
Yeah. I never got that lucky.
She never got that lucky.
Turn that shit around, man.
I like that. Anyway, I went to Camp Kindering like through my family because my grandfather was affiliated with the Workman's Circle.
What it was, right? Yeah.
Which is supposedly a socialist thing, but really it was just a bunch of jokes.
Wait, what?
The Workman's
Circle. The Workman's Circle is a socialist Jewish Zionist organization.
Really?
But the camp was like that, but then it converted to a bunch of Jappy kids from Long Island.
Well, that's an easy transition.
And then you can't tell them they can't
You know
stuff.
What? In all fairness to my wife, she's not that Jappy, a little, my ex-wife, but I think that it had a more grounded group than some of the other camps. I admit that it made a move beyond the socialist
it
movement.
It wasn't religious, you know, per se. We had a Friday service more than Dave did with his one prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to wear all white, from what I remember.
I'm doing the Rita twitch.
No, there goes
the
prayer.
Whenever he says the prayer, I got to do the Rita twitch.
But it was a Zionist camp, I mean, initially, as far as like being pro-Israel.
Right.
That was it.
Right. That was their bigger issue.
But it wasn't when I went there. By then, it was all carnival just people, toys right, and all everyone wanted.
How do you inject Zionism into your camp day, though?
Like what, a lot of camps were Zionists.
But know? What does that mean? Like, what is, so you're playing softball, and like, what does Zionism have to do with playing softball?
You do blue and white
because
confetti
you don't
for
want
the first round.
The Arabs to take over Israel.
You know, like, how much can you integrate Zionism into your camp day?
You didn't want the Arabs to take over Israel.
Okay, well, Israel, what do you do? Is that third period?
There is. That's all I
have. Study hall.
All right.
And it wasn't a religious either.
Meir Kahana comes and speaks to the camp every day.
Remember that guy.
Meir
right?
Kahana came to my temple.
Came to my school. I went to Brandeis. He obviously came there.
I visited you in Brandeis.
I remember. I don't really actually. Tell twice. Me about this. At least twice?
Twice. Once was like the first day of school or something.
You came to visit me the first day of school?
Hey,
first,
just checking
one
in.
One of the first days.
Hey, Alan, I hear things aren't going so well for you. I thought I'd just come by and make sure that you're doing okay.
Need help with your bags?
I was in BU, and I just knew people, the only people.
I remember seeing you, but I don't feel like it was at my school. I felt like it was at your school.
You might have visited me once or twice.
Yeah.
And then I ran into
at least twice.
There you go. Keep that open.
Keith LePack went to BU, who I bumped into.
Yeah, that I know.
But we weren't really friends. And then Henry Zucker went to Curry College.
Right.
I remember that.
Which is near Boston.
Right.
In Boston. And I bumped into him once or twice. But I knew you went to Brandeis and I wanted to go there.
You really came the first day of school
it
for me?
It was the first week. Because I remember it, because that's when we knew
it's
each
like,
other.
It's like, hey, this is Steve. He's going to participate in our orientation.
No, I didn't go to class.
This dude ran from camp.
It was college. It was social. You had friends and stuff, right?
We did, but I do. I still to this day do. But
right.
It's funny to hear someone from BU cruise down to Brandeis to go find a social situation.
It's funny, I guess, but Brandeis had its own allure.
The camp Zionism thing stuck with
that the word? Allure.
And then also later on, I saw some concerts there. They had some concerts there.
Adam Ant.
I remember Jerry Garcia.
Jerry Garcia played, yeah. He played in the gym.
When
he
you
did.
Were there.
I was there, yeah.
So I visited you then.
Yeah.
That was the second time I visited.
Yeah.
And it was
Eddie Murphy.
It was the allure of going to another school, I guess, and somehow getting there, because I had no idea how it got
funniest
there.
Performer ever at Brandeis, and this is not going to be shocking to you, was Billy Crystal, while he was still on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You think he could appeal to like a bunch of Jews from Long Island?
Yeah.
He fucking hit it.
Were all those,
one home run
were
after
all those
the
shows in that gym?
No, they would do them, and there was like another, there was another.
I went to see the Jerry Garcia there, and I was
theater.
With a bunch of guys who we hitchhiked there, and then we had no money. They show me how to sneak in to the gym.
There's a new gym now. The Boston Celtics practice at the Brandeis gym now.
Really?
Didn't they always?
No, they didn't always. They started to do that after I left, and they built a new gym.
Okay.
I just want to interject here for a moment. How this is? We're getting a little off of.
We got to get back to Kittering, and then his
Ruth
Swager,
we'll get back.
And then the girls and the music.
Yeah.
So much to cover.
So we've been thinking that we'd like to hear from some of our listeners, and we'd actually like to do something that's mutually beneficial. And we're eager to promote your business and hopefully help you find business. And what we're looking for in return is just some kind of referral fee so that we can help support our show. Maybe we need to upgrade our mixer. Maybe we need to get better mics. Maybe we need to expand our bandwidth because, frankly, there's more listeners than we thought there were going
to
be.
Maybe we need to hire talent.
So maybe we need a producer so we can mix some things in and out of the show. So as you're listening, if there's anyone out there that has a product or service, Johnny Lieberbaum, we'd love to work with you to push your T-shirts, work something out on that level. Anyone else out there that wants to talk about their, have us speak about their business, promote it, we're happy to do it for a referral fee. And all of those fees will go to this show, making it work. And if there's extra money left over, we'll donate it to a cool charity that we love. And we all would love to support. So just throwing that out there. Nothing happening today. Just going to get that in the mix and speak out on the Swago Swatona website on Facebook.
Let us know. Okay.
Back to our guest.
Well, Camp Kindering, was the camp that most people heard of. And it was a very big camp. It's still open today. A lot of kids still go there.
Yeah.
It's even probably jappier today by 100 times more than it was then. Actually, some of my nieces go there. And I went there for 3 or 4 years. I didn't like it that much. And my parents went to a bungalow colony, which you guys have mentioned in the previous episode. That was like a
Which also had a socialist element to it on some level, of sort of. Do you know what I mean? It was like a community thing. Like it had some sort of element there.
It all changed over once all these socialists
got farm the land, but just in terms of like being together. Sorry, what was that?
There's real socialist camps out there where the people really did farm the food and like lived in tents and stuff like that. There's still some around today. And I know some people that went to those. They spoke in Hebrew and they sung.
One of my good friends from college. Do you remember Kenny Weinstock? Did you ever meet him?
Yeah, I remember that guy.
A couple years behind me. He grew up in northern Westchester in a town called Goldensbridge, and I think there was like a whole thing there, like where the people would come live on the lake for the summer, and it was all a socialist, like they were all socialist. It was like this one socialist group from Brooklyn or whatever that found their way there. There's a lot of that. Like
there was a lot of that in our grandparents' generation. But then once our grandparents, you know, got their successful taste of business, and then our parents took it to the next level, they all moved to Long Island and bought Cadillacs. And
yeah, there was no socialism going on.
Anyway, so jumping back to what you were talking about.
But
so
the camp Kenny was Weinstock, a normal by the camp.
Way, first got to give me an Advil.
It was a normal camp. It
Kenny
was a
Weinstock
lot
was the first guy to give
first
me an
Advil. First guy to give me an Advil.
Give you Adderall?
Was it because Advil?
Advil.
Did Advil just come to market at
Advil
that point?
Advil had just come to market. I'd never seen him before.
You know, Ken is he's always been on top of the next analgesic.
Good man.
Yeah, that's his thing.
But then what happened was on one day I got home from camp and my parents told me we had moved to Merrick from Brooklyn, which is where I grew up.
Oh, you mean you came home to a new home? They were just like, we're not even going to tell
they
you.
They just laid it on you?
They already moved.
Wait, you get home from camp and they're like, you're driving
here's
to another
your
house?
Bedroom.
Yes, I was 12. So this was before my bar mitzvah, but there was already moved. Yeah, the bedroom was moved. The baseball cards were there.
I actually remember your room in the Merrick house.
The bicycle was already there.
You're like up back or like above the front, right?
Yes. No, looks out onto the front.
You looked out onto the front, right?
I love that.
The window.
Had some moments there.
Yeah, had some moments there as well.
You probably were on the roof. You guys ever hang on the roof?
First place I ever learned that you use like a double album to like sort, get the twigs and seeds out of weed.
I think it was 1969 Velvet Underground,
right,
by the way.
I'm just whispering because my son's in the other room.
Well,
I'm not quite
the,
sure, you know. Anyway, back to where we were.
Just to refer what you just said into the record world.
Yes,
world,
yes.
Is record that world Andy, world. One of Andy's specialties was he would go.
Andy the crook.
Yes.
Yeah.
Andy the music promoter.
He's a good guy, actually. He was a very good friend of mine. But he used to take a razor blade and take 20 Cheech and Chong records, big bamboo, and then he would open the record and steal the rolling papers. And he had a whole stack of these.
So Cheech and Chong would sell albums with rolling papers.
They had
packed
it was
inside.
It was a rolling paper. You remember the album Big Bamboo? I mean, it was
that's
Cheech and Chong's album.
I didn't even know that.
And it came like with the rolling paper. It was real rolling paper, and it was the size of an album though, so you could roll a true split with it. So then he had to actually grow some stuff. To have that much stuff because no one had that much stuff to fill it. And then he was obsessed with stealing them. So then he wound up with like 20
It's a vicious
of them.
Circle.
You know, I live in Merrick. Let me go find myself a great plot to grow shitty weed to
he
throw
grew some
into
very,
a,
really
a
bad
humongous
stuff
spleef.
In his backyard, but he had plenty of it to the point when it was, it was a big garbage bag full. Like this much.
For those out there, he's making a big circular sound.
It's like he's
circular
making, it's like he's making the color war team to stand up. It's
right.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's about right.
Just think about when you take your garbage out, that bag being filled, the garbage amount. And he had that. And eventually his parents actually took it. Somehow they didn't throw it out. And then they took it back.
His parents took it. They didn't confront it. They're like, oh, great.
Yeah. His mom took it, put it in her closet. Then we just went back in the closet and took it back. But we used the big bamboo to roll the, roll the joints back then.
Nice,
anyway, that's
nice.
Just a little record world aside because this guy was quite obsessed with stealing stuff.
Right. So can I have
Sway? I still want to get the
Swaygo
transition.
Thing.
Yeah, I always thought it was Kurzweil that somehow got you there. Was it?
Right.
Was it him?
That's who I met when I moved to Merrick. It was the last day of camp, and then the bungalow colony, for a week, and then we moved. My parents.
So you did have a bungalow colony happening while you were at camp.
Yeah, because like
see that
you
that
know,
was right. People were actually having
my
go
camp
on.
Ended back then in August, whatever 28th.
And you would
then
go up with your parents at a bungalow.
They were
colony.
A mile away. They were
from
right there.
Sway from
that's what
from
I said.
Kindred.
They were kind of close.
It was called Spiros, and it was like a mile.
Spiros was it a Greek? We had souvlaki and
no, it was all Jewish, but now it's all Russian Jewish. But I heard it's overgrown Spiros. Now. Like Swago is. So.
Here's your tzatziki.
And my grandparents were there, not in Spiros, but in another like slightly higher class bungalow colony, like another
Spiros.
Half a mile
away. Spiros and Constantines.
That part was cool though.
All right, I'm done with that joke.
I learned how to play like high stakes poker with men.
High stakes
with
poker.
Greek men.
No, they were all Jewish. Don't confuse yourself. Everyone there was Jewish. Even like the maintenance guys were Jewish.
All right.
Guys who like
did
knew
you
how to run
for,
tractors.
Play
stuff.
For baklava. All right, I'm moving on. So,
no, but I would watch the man play poker.
What qualified as high stakes poker?
2 to 5, let's say, in 1976.
I don't even know what that means.
$2 ante, $5 first bet. That's so high stakes. 5, 10, 15, 20. It would be $20 for each person to put in to stay in just on one cart. Then it was 7 carts. You know, it could be like many hundreds of dollars.
Sounds serious.
Yeah, I was like a, when I was lucky, I would be the flamingo kid and I would run to the canteen for them to get their sandwiches and they'd give me dollars.
So you do that right after camp ended?
For a week or two, and I would
also. And then, so what made you?
And I was, so I would also coordinate it somehow that it was color war. They had day camp at the bungalow colony, so I got into their color war too.
You really worked that color war.
Yeah,
to
I was
advantage.
Wait, adults played color war?
No,
it was the bungalow
kids.
Colony.
Oh, bungalow.
It was
okay.
Kids, because
okay.
There were kids, the kids there.
Okay.
I just remember our song was to the song Yellow Submarine, we all live in a dirty bungalow.
Sounds like an appealing place.
The songs weren't as good as our songs.
So let's go back to Swago music for a second. So who would you say, like, of all the bands that came through during your 3 years there? I mean, for me, I mean, it's got to be Look Sharp is the album that was the most
Look
influential.
Look Sharp's the album.
That was our signature
influential
album,
across.
But the most influential group, I have to say, is the
Clash.
How could it be?
Agreed.
Yeah.
You know, and we
rode the Clash from the Little Punk Boys all the way up to Sandinista.
Yeah. And one of the great experiences for me, and I'm sure for you guys, we saw the Clash a lot of times. You all stayed at my house. We went to see him in Asbury Park.
Right.
Oh, we saw him on, you know, at Bonds, whatever
Bonds,
what was that?
That was the highlight.
Never understood what that was. Bonds Casino. What was up with that? Was it ever really a casino? What was that?
It was a clothing store.
It was a Bonds men's clothing store.
That
it was like for cheap Botany 500.
Converted to a standing room.
Before it was
club.
A rock club. I think it was a
so we get there.
It was a supper club.
So
let me ask you, though. That was while we were still in camp?
I think it was
Bonds?
Between first and second year senior year.
We went with Russell.
I think that was
first and second year senior.
I think it was between 80 and 81. I think
we went all of us, like the four of us and the three
and the younger
kids,
guys, too. Because
it was a matinee day, if you remember.
Well, what happened,
they canceled the matinee.
For those, they had booked like 6 or 7 shows, like double oversold them, and I think
on
the
purpose.
Fire department just is like,
I went
way.
To the first two
which
nights.
Was smart.
And they turned it into 15 days. Yeah, great marketing ploy right now.
It was.
Yeah,
well,
leave those days open, right?
What happened was they did
so
like
we saw
six
a handful
seven
of
shows
together, yeah.
And they was 2,000 capacity.
And they sold 4,000 tickets.
They sold 2,000 in Ticketmaster and 2,000 in the box office.
Double
dealing, like no one would notice.
Right. We won't notice when you can't even breathe
well,
when you get inside.
It's an old promoter trick, and you know how every show's oversold anyway. And it was, I don't know if it was Ron Delzer or whatever, but it was those guys.
So we went to a handful of those. That was awesome.
Well, luckily, somehow we wound up doubling our tickets also, which
right.
I don't know exactly how
I remember
it
getting turned away, and we almost
the first,
went
to the
see
first
Duran
time we went.
Duran.
Well, I'll tell you the story.
They were playing somewhere nearby, and we didn't go.
It must have been Irving Plaza, but it could have been the Peppermint Lounge, which was very nearby.
Peppermint Lounge, I believe.
It was right around the corner from Bonds.
What was the
we
other
all
one?
Went
was
to the
Ritz.
Show.
The Ritz was also another
that
place.
Was down here. The Ritz was just on 13th Street.
Webster Hall.
Sorry, you too there.
Yeah, yeah.
I worked there. I saw a lot
Arctic
of
Monkeys, by the way, just announced playing Webster Hall September, my favorite band. I'll be seeing them.
Arctic
I worked
Monkeys
at the Ritz from 86 to 88 for 18 months, and I worked there every show.
Oh.
So that was a lot of shows.
At the Ritz, you worked there every show?
Every show. I saw everything. You know, in the same week, it would be like jazz, punk, African, comedy in 1 week. You know, cause
let's get back to the girl in our bunk. Somehow we move back.
Let's build up to that.
And they were criticized for not talking enough Septona.
But anyway, so I moved to Merrick. This was 1975. I had a new lifestyle because, I don't know if you guys lived in the city ever in 5 boroughs.
When I was little.
But when you move from there into Long Island. Yeah. Or
you lived in the city?
The suburbs.
I lived in Queens for a while.
Let me tell you,
it is culture shock. It is so different. You could walk in the streets. Cars won't run you over. People don't curse at you. People stop at stop signs.
And we're back.
Lots to talk about with our guest, Stephen Popkin.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
You know, there's so much of what you were about. It was ingrained in my experience, Howie's experience at Swago LA. So let's get back to some of what we're just chatting about. So
it was the girl in the bunk.
That's where my head's going.
We're going to get there. That was really the third year, though, of camp. So we've got to at least...
So do we do this chronologically, this whole thing? We can go. We can bounce.
We're just bouncing. But anyway, what happened
was that...
Just
close loops. Just close
circles. When I moved to Merrick, I decided I didn't want to go back to camp kindering anymore because it was more affiliated with my parents and my sister and brother. You know, I was making my own name for myself.
There you go.
And my friend in fifth grade was Stephen Kurzweil. And so I sat next to him in class, and I looked over to him, and I said, "What camp do you go to?" And he goes, "Camp Swago." And so I said, "Oh, I'm going to go there." And that was it. So the next, I told my parents I'm going to Camp Swago. They probably put some pressure on me to pick a camp because I said I wouldn't go back. And then they called up Camp Swago, and then Dave Blumstein came to my house with his little Super 8 film projector and his spiel because he had some papers that he showed you. Like, he showed me the old postcard.
Right, right.
You know, the old postcards.
Right, right, with his appeal
box. Did you start in... Were you, you weren't in L4 with me and Eddie the first. You were L5, right? You were the next... Right. You were next door to us.
It was the famous year of Moose.
Who were you with in that bunk?
No, that was...
Who was in that bunk? Inter's.
I'm going to tell you.
Inter-year, yeah.
Now, another guy from America was Scott Schneider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott, of
now,
course.
He was my age and my friend also.
But he was at Swago for quite a while.
Right. The year I went there was his last year. And Kurzweil didn't go that year. He was done with camp.
He was kind of remembering.
I never went to camp with Kurzweil.
No?
No. The year we were talking, L5.
So wait a minute. He goes, hey, where are you going? You're like, Swago. Oh, I'm going to. And he just bails?
He's like, team tour or whatever.
That's insane.
He's that's where I would have gone, Steve.
Even though he was my good friend, I just needed a camp to tell my parents because they were bothering me. What
so this
camp?
Was it. Yes.
And it was good enough. And then I found out Schneider went there. And I was friends with him.
Right.
We were pretty good friends. You know, we all were pretty good friends. So you know how it is in there. You just live next. You know, I live one block that way.
I had the same thing with the Roslyn guys. Too,
one block that way. In that same bunk was, I believe, Keith LePack and Henry Zucker.
Mm-hmm. Right. That okay. That's
there was
I'm
one other
to remember
person.
Who the inter-
that, there was one other person.
That's first year seniors.
Eddie will
remember. Was it the same bunk when you were inters? Same guys.
Inters. Yeah. Who was it? Inters.
It was Moose. Was our counselor.
That's first year seniors.
We had Dave Jacobs with me.
So who was my inter-counselor then?
I don't know.
Who was the counselors? It was Moss,
Why
Dave Jacobs.
Are you so sure he wasn't an inter-counselor, Moose?
I wasn't in was Eddie's
Dave, I guess it's
Dave
possible.
Dave Jacobs was my counselor. I had Eddie, Alan Wolgamuth.
Right.
Boy, I'm blanking. Who were the other
But after
of
that
guys?
Year, you teamed up with the Roslyn guys, and I got into
that
the
That was
Eddie,
the year. The
Eddie
first
bunk.
Year seniors year
Started
was my only year with Mike Moss.
It aggregated into the last year when we were all in the same bunk.
That was great.
We were just the survivors.
Speaking of Eddie, I have some good news for everybody. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
All right, we're back on.
We're back on, and... Just to update, we've got our great friend, fellow L.A.er, bunkmate. You know what? Duke and Moi, Popkin and Eddie. They were like the bro. You guys were tight as could be.
It was
still
a
foursome, to this day.
It was a great coming together.
And then what? So we had Jake.
It was Jake.
Too,
that was it.
It was just Jake?
It was just Jake. And then Feldman came in towards the end.
Yeah, Feldman was there the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, Color War only.
Completed his team tour.
And we didn't, if you remember also.
That's interesting. Now that I think about that. Mm-hmm.
All right, hello everybody, this is Eddie.
Hey!
And I'm just so glad to be here with the guys. I love the ski slope. And just continue where you were.
Eddie,
you
got it.
It's
awesome.
Great to
awesome
see you,
to have
it's
you
here. Really great to see you. Yeah, we had Jake, and we didn't have a counselor, if you guys remember. We had the tennis counselor.
Right.
So I'm
going
to get to the story, which is a great story how me and Eddie came to camp with the counselors 2 days before camp.
Okay.
I almost remember this. I'm like, we got. There.
I remember showing up.
And
they were already set up.
And
the stereo
the music
was going.
Set up.
It was all planned out. The stereo. We had a whole locker for the records, which you were correct. Half were his, half were mine. I had a fan because that was like one thing I said. It's too hot. No one ever had
heat.
A fan in Camp Swago.
Steve's delicate.
Music and air conditioning.
He might seem rough, but he's a delicate man.
I needed a fan because it was really hot. And then also I had a clock radio, which we'll play into a later story also. And I love to have the clock radio. It's between your two beds so I could see it.
I don't remember that.
So I always
I don't
time.
Remember that at
no
all
one had a
either.
Clock in camp.
No, why would you need one?
Yeah, we exactly. Just
no,
in case you missed
I mean,
milk and cookies.
Didn't, like,
what
the periods change or something?
Well, they did, but
they
who
did.
Gave
I
a fuck
a bugle.
What
I had a bugle.
Was.
I didn't need to watch.
Oh, it was a bugle.
Did the time really matter at that point? If it was 10:40 or 10:60 or 10:52?
No, but the best part of it was when Eddie would wake me up to tell me to turn the A-track of Pink Floyd off because the clock... for time would go off and we all bunk would wake up every 45 minutes.
<That'd be
alarm. laughs> Oh, the third time Eddie would be like, take it out, because we had an 8-track of it, and 8-tracks would play constantly. They never stopped. And we're like, and you know, at a certain
if
you guys remember that?
Yeah,
if there's, any band that you would be okay with playing over and over again, it would probably be Pink Floyd.
Right, but the
except
third
that,
time of
the
all the alarms
going off
right,
it was waking
right.
us up every 45 minutes.
I prefer Earl Chin
but
on
then
the,
I would look
on the
at
A-track
the,
loop.
I would look at the clock and I would see it's like 2:45. Then I would be like, okay, I'll turn it off. Because I was too, you know, I don't want to get out of, no one wanted to get out of bed somehow. Because, you know, retired. So
it's hard work going to camp.
On the third year of camp, I somehow I knew that the counselors got there 2 days early from Moose. I guess, you know. I mean, me and Moose were really close, really, really close. You know.
Did even you correspond after camp?
Yeah, during camp. During camp, mm-hmm. when he got fired, I called him every week. I was on a direct orders to call him every Friday at a certain time. And
sundown.
Do we have official phone time that you can only use a phone at a certain time?
I think when you were younger, it was a little stricter, but as you got older,
you just walk up to the office and make a call.
It was like I had to go Friday at like 5 and call him, and I talked to him every week because he wanted to be filled in with everything, all the gossip and what people were saying about him, of course, and then all the other stupid gossip about, you know, Pearl's basketball exploits and, you know, such. He really cared.
Yeah, he did.
Really, I believe that completely.
He truly cared, and I was the conduit because. You know, I was close to him because, you know, I think I always got compared to him as the bad boy of camp.
Right.
You know, it was always like, you know, Moose did this, Moose got shafted, Moose got thrown out, you know, and then Pop.
Well, no one's going to argue that you got shafted.
Well.
Or never, do you feel that, actually?
No.
Do you feel
Eddie like and I never expected to be leaders based on who the other guys were, but
you created
I had
team,
the least amount of seniority of everyone, so I knew I wasn't going to be a leader.
Did you think maybe one of you deserved it over Brad Goldsamt?
Well, Gottlieb was our friend, and Eddie and I and Gottlieb, we started the blue team.
That's right.
For one day.
That's right.
Because Gottlieb did
get
shafted, which you did tell the story, you know, a couple of podcasts ago. And Gottlieb was, you know, was his own legacy, and, you know, he was a bit of a crazy, you know, pyromaniac type who liked to play with army stuff. But he was still a guy who was in camp since he was a baby, and, you know, he never did anything bad. He never got thrown out.
I think the problem
wasn't like Matt,
was,
and he didn't try to blow something up.
No, the drinking.
But he knew how
it did do him in.
And like I said before, there was that time where, like, he, Noodles, Mark First, Goldsamt, there was a time they weren't on a group, and then they sort of leapfrogged.
Right,
in.
So how did Noodles become a leader, play that? You know, if it was only for second-year seniors? I guess it, Jake was
I mean, he was a second-year senior, but he was like, you know, he recently joined
our
group.
Was he in the second? He skipped a group in the intern?
I think he was a first-year senior with us. I think those guys were first-year seniors with us, too.
Noodles skipped a year?
At some point.
Well, you said
he used to be in the younger group, and then all of a sudden he was with us.
Yeah, but are you saying that Noodles didn't come for 1 year, or that
when I was an Eagle, he was a junior.
When he was a second
And then somehow he was not only in the seniors with me, he was a second-year senior.
Camp was suffering. The size of the size of the camp was shrinking at that point already. When we were there, it was when I started, there were 215, 220 kids. By the time we were seniors, there was probably 150, 160 kids. It was 170 maybe. It was nowhere near as large.
And by 2 years later, it was probably half that, right?
And then it was zero.
Last year.
And then it was none.
It went to zero real quick, like in 2 years.
By the way, just to promote, we're going to be talking about that again on a future podcast called The End of Swago.
We've chosen a title for it.
What about The Revolution? I thought it was going to be called The Revolution.
Well, or The End of Swago.
Can you tell us the guest for that episode?
Well, we're still negotiating.
We are negotiating, but the guests will be the participants. You're going to be talking to the Liebners, the Benders. Hopefully, we're going to have Holtzman call in.
Yeah, Holtzman had told me the story, the whole story.
Holtzman was
integral. He was a year younger than all
Holtzman
the other
guys.
He was very involved, a key component
of the story.
Yes, he was.
And they're all going to be participating. We're going to be reliving.
Because there was the revolution, which you guys reminded me of, and then there was the end. You know, it was
all I'm going to say is Holtzman had nunchucks, and he knew how to use them.
Scared the shit out of that head counselor.
I don't blame him.
I would have been scared.
Right? He's a big kid. He's got nunchucks. He's like using them properly.
That's cool. Steve's showing me like a picture of like graffiti, quote unquote.
This is the last year of Swago.
On the L8 bunks.
And you'll see your brother's name is down there.
Where is he?
He's below the first one.
It is a good photo.
But it gives everyone's years.
I like how it's framed with
it. Says, We Love Swago.
We're going to post this shortly.
All right. Yeah, that comes on. This
one. I've seen that a bunch of times.
It's a good shot.
But it just says, I love Camp Swago. And it says 1984, which was the last year, right?
That was it. No 1985.
Well, that picture was taken a year ago. All right. L8 was still standing. So where were we, boys?
Elliot was still standing.
Steve Kurzweil.
Steve Kurzweil brought me to camp. He didn't come. Schneider was there, but none of us were in the same bunk, all of the guys sitting here. Eddie had his group with Alan Wagamuth and his friends. You guys, you were in
Alan
the Roslyn bunk.
Cousin,
you were in the Wagamuth bunk, he said.
I was with Eddie. Who else was in our bunk? Me, you, Alan Wagamuth.
And maybe a couple of other new kids that year.
Maybe I feel like
Doug
there was
Turetsky.
The Argentine kid. Doug Turetsky was a good Eagle.
Turetsky's a Ranger, I think, at best.
Yeah, at best.
I got to say, want to compliment you because when we were new at camp that year, me and my cousin, you accepted us. You know, you were the guy that had been there before.
Really? Nice.
A big athlete. And, you know, you just made us feel welcome. And that didn't happen to me the year before at Camp Indian Head.
Fuck Indian Head.
See that?
Bastards.
That's all that's what
it's
about.
You're an awesome dude.
And speaking of Merrick,
you spin all down on
Merrick legend is Alan Wolgamuth.
Legend in what regard?
He Rat was town? From Merrick, and he went to Swago. That's all it takes.
Oh, I thought he did something post.
He's no Amy Fisher.
But. No, but what I'm saying is, like, I got there, and there's another guy from my junior high school. And then who's his cousin?
I believe we may have discussed this on a previous podcast.
Who was his cousin?
Oh, well, they were cousins.
That's
true.
That's how I met Eddie.
Nobody had a rat tail like Alan Wolgamuth.
What was that rat tail? That thing was
he
crazy,
had a
remember?
Unique patent on that.
it was killer. Beyond anybody else.
Well, you know what? He grew
like
up
magnitude.
On the water, and I'm pretty sure his dad had a boat.
I'd get a well.
He might have learned it from all
his
that
dad
boarding.
Had a boat. You know,
yeah, on boats, you learn how to like whip rope around stuff.
That's true. That's true.
Sick rat tail.
So I get to camp, and I see Eddie. I see Wolgamuth, you know, who's a pretty big guy. I think
he was
we both
a big guy.
Tried out
he was an anchor on the
tugboat. And for some reason, like, all the better athletes were playing a different game. Maybe I couldn't have been intercamp, but somehow you Pearlstein wasn't there, you weren't there. But me and Eddie.
What? Look at that compliment. He gave you the better athlete compliment.
Me and Eddie were playing basketball.
Nothing
somehow
you
me and
done,
Eddie had
way,
our own court. We had the whole court
tonight.
Eddie and I. So it must have been. How could we have that? And I was. I don't know. I mean, you guys remember. I don't know how to play basketball. Someone just told me to stand under the basket
and push everyone
out of the
being,
way.
I remember you being, well, later
That's
on.
What my coach told me. All right. Stand under the basket and just push everyone out of the way. That was my role.
I remember Eddie was a good third baseman.
Right.
Thank you.
He was. Better than Carrie Dines.
Eddie was good on the hot seat.
So I played a very aggressive game, and I didn't even get the rebound. I was just pushing people away. That was it.
No,
so
that's how you get rebounds, Steve.
No, but
it's
I didn't
hard
grab the
work.
Ball after that. Just push the guys away.
Well, as long as one
somebody
of
else get the rebound.
Died.
I'm just blocking
coach
out.
Coach told me to grab the rebound after that. Finally, Mike Moss taught me a few of the fundamentals. Thank God.
Moss.
But anyway, I was playing. It was me and somebody against Eddie and Wolgamuth. And I was playing in my style. Very aggressive and being terrible. Scoring no points. And being an embarrassment.
But a lot of pushing.
Yeah, just pushing. But it was getting to the point where whatever. You know, they were pushing me back, and it was almost a fight. And then Eddie leans over. He leans into me, and he says, wait till you play basketball with Pearlstein and those guys.
Oh, shit. Wow. He trembled.
He goes, you won't be able to play with them. You could push me right now. But that's how we became friends. I think that day.
Eddie, quick question. Oh, yeah.
I really didn't like you that first day.
Whoa. You didn't like his pushing on the court?
Was that what? I was like, who is this new guy?
This aggressive son of a bitch.
Yes.
It would be different if I scored a point, though.
Yeah, I got you.
I could have pulled it off, but he's like, wait till you play with Pearlstein. He's like, and the other guys.
that was the
He did say the other guys, but he did Pearlstein as the only name. He said, you won't be able to play with them.
What about Boog? He didn't mention Boog?
You didn't mention Jake who beat me?
No, Boog was there.
He did beat you that one time. All right.
He did beat me once. I didn't think
we're
going
to have
time.
Jake on. We're gonna
we
have
are. We'll have to hash that out. If you beat me,
So then like a day later or a second day later, I went to visit Eddie and Wolgamuth in the bunk. Because he's one of the few guys I knew, even though he hated me. We hated each other.
Listen, we've established some sort of
right.
rapport.
I knew him. But and then he would at least
communicate with me.
Right. He communicated with me, and maybe the other guys didn't. I mean, I knew Schneider and whatever. I mean, you know, I was accepted to some degree and whatever right at the beginning. But
I don't remember the first
you had a good fro. You had a good fro.
I had the Jew fro back then.
Yeah, that was
classic. It's immortalized in this Lego picture. So I went to visit Eddie, and Eddie had A-Trax. Somehow A-Trax was the method back then. And I guess he had an A-Trax player, or he didn't have a stereos back then. And he played me.
Yeah, that banana thing.
That Panasonic carry thing in the colors.
We all had those. It was a boombox for A-Trax.
What a stupid medium, the A-Trax.
God almighty. Yeah, I want to hear a whole series of four 17 songs.
17 minutes till I hear that again? Great.
So if I go forward, I just want to go a quarter of the way forward. That's logical. Why don't we just move you a quarter of the way of the album
but
forward?
We had our own 8-track recorders back then, which most kids didn't have, from Radio Shack. We could make our own 8-tracks for the
I don't even remember that.
Right. I don't remember at all.
I'm pretty sure you had one.
We would record to 8-track?
And yes, they were so
how do you think Earl Chin was on 8-track?
They were so bulky and cumbersome, too. I remember being like, growing up, my parents in the car would have like the Frank Sinatra and Edie Gourmet like 8 tracks, and I'm like, Jesus, those things are as and big as like a fucking pizza box.
And they would never time the song, so it's like it would end, and then you get to the next like channel 3. Like it would be in the middle of the song, the fade worst. Out, just click like over, said, fade
when you had
in.
A fast forward, like, you never got to another song. You got to a quarter
you got to
of
the
way
middle of some other crappy song.
And then it also there was no stop on it, which is our issue at camp. Mm. It just kept playing over and over again.
All right, Howie, quick question.
Sure.
Single funniest, greatest Steve Popkin sports moment. Go. I know mine.
Oh, Equinox softball game, Intercamp.
Yeah, mooning and giving the finger to the owner of Equinox.
Yes.
Guys, you were pitching and purposely pitching.
It was more the game itself, though, because you really like.
Why? Because he took 15 minutes between each pitch.
Yeah, I slowed down the pace of the game because the ump wasn't agreeing with me.
So we decided to take. I'm exaggerating with 50. It was a good 40 seconds between
each
pitch.
No, I did it like regular baseball players do it, you know? They go like this.
The bus was waiting.
He was. Oh. The bus was really waiting. Everything else had finished, so the entire like two camps.
Everybody's watching.
The
we're in the second inning.
No, I convinced. I think it was Moss who was the coach.
The bottom of every inning where we were
Tim
pitching.
Tim Brody
took,
was
took an
Moss's
hour.
Like pet, you know, guy.
Tim Brody was Moss's pet
for
a pitcher
on the team.
But you pitched.
I was a back. I was the relief pitcher.
Why
I
did they knock him. Brody out of the box?
Timmy was done the day.
Because it was the end of the game. It wasn't the second inning. It was like the seventh inning.
Timmy just couldn't find his way over the plate.
His shoulder was shot.
So they must have been a little desperate. But somehow I convinced him, because I was like the starting pitcher for the B team or whatever, that I was the best backup pitcher.
Best available.
Somehow I got him.
You lobbed it over the plate.
Because the main, I had a nice little pitch.
I remember Popkin being your pitcher.
I had a spin.
Right. You would work for the speed, too. It wasn't just the lob.
I had a little pitch going. You know, I could pitch 2 innings. You know, that was my specialty.
Big rotation, too, right? Like, you would go for the whole.
But in that game,
Popkin
you know,
on
the
mound, Eddie on third base. Yeah. The solid. Memories. The memories.
What did you play?
I was a sure. center fielder.
Center?
For the
depends.
Part.
Was that the bottom of the A team
were
or
first?
The top of the B?
First base?
I'm kidding. I know you always say that. I played first base frequently.
Yeah, of
frequently.
Course.
Yeah.
The tallest guy
was
first. Yeah. So the umpire was like, I forgot. He
where
made
did
a call
you play,
I
Howie?
Didn't like.
Was
center field.
Well, you're fast, so that would make sense.
He played a call. He made a call I didn't like, and then I just slowed down the pace of the game. That it was pitching every 40 seconds, like you said. And,
it was at Equinox, by the way.
It was
not,
yes, and the bus was there, but I don't know how people were.
People were done. We were done. People
every other group had finished their
oh,
game.
Oh, the whole intercamp games was a whole camp or a whole
yeah,
camp?
Yeah,
or
like
at
two
least
three
it was a
over.
Handful of
half
of
the camp.
It was the 13.
So barnstorming was just only when it was just
one
us.
Group.
We,
one
did
group.
We go barnstorming more
yes.
than once?
You talked about it, but I remember
that was it. I remember one time French Woods
Noodles
sleeping on
that
sleeping in their social hall.
And wasn't
we slept in the social hall?
Wasn't Jack driving the van?
Naked, I don't recall.
Jack,
but
Jack was driving our van naked during barnstorming. Did anyone else recollect that?
Really? Does anyone else remember that? Or is that Howie's little fantasy?
Barely, but I do remember.
Nobody remembers that? Oh, shit.
I remember meeting girls in French Woods and going to girls' bunks. You guys were, I guess, don't remember this. You guys
no recollection
there.
Of that?
Were you with me?
Not the naked part.
All
right. Did you remember meeting girls? Girls
I remember Jack driving.
I just don't remember seeing his balls.
I met a girl that was from Merrick. And that
barnstorming count on Jake
trip.
For that one.
She invited me to her bunk.
He might have been topless. I don't believe he had his pants off.
I swear he did.
No, Jack would do stuff like that as long as no one would.
Wait, hold on.
No.
Wait, let me just. He didn't have any underwear. He was just hanging
low.
Was,
he was hanging loose and driving van away. I mean, not for an extended period of time, but in a brief moment where he thought, I'm going to be nuts and do this.
He pulled it down.
Right?
Nowadays, they do pictures from every cab. It's like. Here's the pictures from July 18th. Here's this
senior,
the senior group leader. Oh, that's his penis.
No, he was
oh,
driving.
Oh, that's not okay? He's driving naked?
We only saw his ass because he was driving. His penis was showing to the steering wheel.
True, in fairness.
Stellar would love to show off that thing, didn't he?
Listen, anyway, counselors did a lot of things back then that they could not get away with today. Let's face it.
Well, we've discussed this.
The liquor and drugs is one issue.
They didn't get
what
away
about
with
the torture? And
the abuse,
you know,
the physical abuse.
And the 3 a.m. feedings.
What do you think would happen today if a bunch of people took a broom stick and shoved it up one of the kitchen boys' butts?
Yeah, that is called sexual abuse. You know, that's
what
like
was that? That
six,
was Chicken
six,
George.
Six,
what the fuck happened there? It was a crazy.
I don't know.
Event.
I didn't see anything firsthand. I can't comment.
Listen, oh, look at you shying away. There was a rumor. It was a swinging rumor about
it
like
was.
They held down some kitchen boy and put like a. Broomstick up his butt.
You hear about that happening in hazing and sports.
It was the
it's
toilet,
happened
the last
10 years
brush.
All the time.
I don't think toilet brush broom all the same. You know?
Hope just
I don't think they
listen,
got all
Moose,
the way up to
Moose
the
once tortured Eddie and I.
It sucked.
Moose tortured Eddie and
it
I
makes
once.
It all the worse.
He woke us up in the middle of the night We were disoriented.
Moose did this?
Yeah, this is like a straight out of the Simian Liberation Army, like, you know, handbook, what they did to people, like break them down.
Okay.
Or the weathermen or whatever.
Right.
He woke us up 3 a.m. We're okay. Disoriented. We didn't wake up. He shoved, like, food into our mouth.
And it's better than a broomstick up your butt.
Or we were in our bathroom.
Grateful man.
Or maybe he was
should
in his bathroom.
Thankful for that.
And then he took a broom or a rake and he took us down to the basketball court. This is 3 a.m, or maybe 2. And made us jog laps.
You had the clock. You should know what time it was.
It was a year before the clock.
That's why I brought the clock.
He was just confused about what time
he made
it was
us
being
run
abused.
Laps around the court in the middle of the night.
With a rake?
He would hold the broom up as his weapon. And as we would pass him, he would hit us. Like a coach. You know how coaches are, you know, like faster, like we were a horse. And he would smack us with it. And then by the end, when we stopped, because we couldn't run anymore, then he beat us.
Who's us, by the way? Because it wasn't me.
It was Eddie and I.
Just the two of you?
I don't know how much he remembers that.
I got to get Eddie on here.
I got to tell you, I don't remember that too clearly, but I do remember.
He doesn't remember the beating or the nakedness. No. I'm with you on that.
No, we weren't naked.
We couldn't go
to the movies. I know you weren't naked.
That was Jack.
We did something wrong. They wouldn't let us go to the movies with the rest of the group. And they made Moose stay back with us, and he couldn't go.
So you guys were like psyched.
He made us like hold up baseball bats. You know, with our arms extended and things like that.
When we leaned down, he beat us. Let me qualify. But just to confirm this information, Moose himself said that he used to beat Maddie the Rat.
He did.
Black and blue, and then Dave told him just don't leave any marks. So it's not like he didn't admit to beating. Because this was around the same time, maybe, you know, around the same time.
And he was bigger than
you guys,
probably
the same
year. Five or six years?
Basically.
So you're like 15, he's 20?
We were taller than him, but he was wider than us, you know. But so he was Moose, though.
Moose was basically buying liquor for us and beating you guys silly. And he wonders why he was kicked out of camp.
He was the greatest counselor ever.
But still, he's
the greatest counselor ever. What other counselor would do that for
him? I don't doubt that.
And then also, you know, leave his remnants of smokables when he left camp also, you know.
Allegedly.
After he was fired, you know, just say, here, I'm going back to the city. I don't need this. You guys have it.
I don't remember me being one of the guys.
Well, he gave it to me, and then I...
To you and Eddie. He tortured you. He should give it to you.
I divvied you guys up.
Yeah.
And the waiter, we used to hang on the waiter's book.
He's
the
chair.
There with Lieberman.
All right, fine.
And Paul Allen.
Mm. I recall.
Dump. Everything was kept in that bunk.
Which bunk?
The waiter's bunk.
Oh, was it?
Because it's where Peter Geller somehow couldn't find it.
He was off limits.
What was Peter Geller's role that year?
Well, what happened was this, is that... Eddie and I came to camp 2 days early. I looked at the schedule.
Fine.
Somehow there was a schedule.
Counselors get there 2 days
right.
early.
Right. It said like
the two of you like coordinate that you're going to just get there early.
I did it. Let's be honest.
So what did you do? How'd you get there?
I had my dad drive. I was like, Dad, would you drive me? And he said yes. And I called
Eddie.
What
was your thinking? What was your rationale?
I wanted to get the best beds and the best clothes.
I knew I was fucked. I hated that lumpy fucking mattress.
No, not the best
you
mattress.
You screwed me, you
not
son of a bitch.
Not mattress wise.
Yeah,
he
I
brought
wanted
his own
the best
mattress.
Location, and I wanted the best locker right next to the bunk.
Okay, so you went
the
up
cubby,
2 days
what
early.
They call cubbies?
Cubbies.
So you went up, and Eddie's like, sure, I'll fucking come with you. Why not? What else
and
do
plus,
I have to
I
do?
And plus, I think we wanted to avoid the bus, too, because the bus was, I didn't like
it. The bus was fun.
I always liked the bus.
I didn't like it for some reason.
It was like the van ride.
And, you know, my dad was going to drive us because he lived, you know, he had his bungalows, and he also, like, worked in Wilkes-Barre area, you know, which is
so he knew that.
Away.
Well, sort of, but I got you. I got what you're saying.
He actually did wind up moving right into the Poconos, which, you know, is like 45 minutes away.
Right.
You know, on the Delaware River himself, around that time, too.
What'd you do for those 2 days?
Once you established the actual cot that you were going to take, what'd you do after that? Not the cot itself, just the location of
that's
where
what
it
I mean,
was.
The actual location of it, yeah.
He's very particular about not taking the cot.
No, I didn't care about
didn't
the bed.
Care
all
about
the bed
frame.
Sucked.
I didn't care about the cushion. I didn't care about the mattress. I needed to have the southeast portion of LA.
I had the middle of the left side.
Anywhere you
that's
were.
Not even a
you
good spot.
You were middle left. Jake was upper right. I was lower left. Howie was middle right. I was lower right. I think Howie was middle right.
Yeah,
I
was like
Jake
was me,
far right.
Me and Jake were across. Me and Howie were across, and then you were
who was across? Was whoever
Rich,
our counselor was
Rich Lewis.
Richard Lewis was our counselor.
Now let's get to that.
Not the Richard Lewis, by the way. That would have been funny.
He was British.
Yeah.
We went to camp early, and we had the run of the camp. We did not have a counselor.
Dave okayed this?
Somehow. It called Dave.
Stan signed off.
Dave 100% okayed this. Either my dad or I called Dave. Now,
question
back to
for
Dave,
the Facebook listeners. Did anyone else go to camp prior to camp going, or Steve Popkin, the only one that's ever done this with Eddie. Come anyway, on. Let's keep going.
Dave was, as you guys know, was a math teacher as well.
I was
well.
Just making it all interactive. Did you like that? Just going into the social media element of it? All right, sorry, go ahead.
Dave was the math teacher as well as the assistant principal of James Madison High School in Brooklyn, in the Chesapeake Bay Homecrest area, which is where I grew up, and my father went there.
Is that your fascination with Rockaway now on Facebook? Is that related
it
to that?
It started there.
We'll get back to that. Go ahead.
We'll get back. That's like too long a story. But yeah, my dad took me there after Coney Island went bad.
So now you're the Facebook authority on Rockaway.
No, I'm just a junior member of all the other Rockaway people. Anyway, so Dave walked into my house, and my dad knew who it was, and they knew each other, which was...
That's kind of cool.
It was cool, but it was weird.
But hadn't they had? Wasn't there some sort of like trouble your father had gotten into?
No.
No?
My dad was a student, though, of his, so he knew him.
Okay.
And Dave, I guess, back then was a sharp. Mm-hmm. And he remembered my dad and the name and whatever, and that was another reason why we went. But then Dave showed us a movie on the wall.
Mm-hmm. Was it a carousel with the
yeah,
the slides,
carousel right? slideshow. That
I remember to... Super 8, though. I remember a movie.
I never
saw you
anything.
Had film?
I think I had the Swago story or something. And then some sheets of handouts.
I used to have a crush on your sister. She was. I used to love your sister.
Everybody did.
Sorry,
I
just wanted
was
to
Vicky?
Digress a second. How was she doing?
I know that. Faustine, I remember that. And you've mentioned it every time I see you. she's okay. You know, truthfully...
Truth don't have to be truthful. You know what? If it's going to hurt your sister, don't say another word.
She's, you know, she's 50 now, so.
What the fuck?
Hey, we all are.
We're 50. How old is she? She's older than us.
I bet she's more beautiful than ever.
There you go.
Don't raise your arms. Say yes, Alan. That's exactly right.
Oh, he's not on mic.
She had that Linda Ronstadt thing going on. Vicky.
So the year
does she live in Queens? Sorry, can I just go back to my childhood fantasy? Where
lives in Staten Island now.
She's married?
Not married, living kids? With somebody for many years. No kids.
No kids. All right.
No.
All right, let's get back to Steve's story.
And here we go.
It doesn't sound like that has too much opportunity. Let's
so I set the whole thing up back in the day of no cell phones or whatever. I had my dad call Dave because he knew Dave and Dave liked him or whatever. Or just remembered him was enough. And told him the story that he's driving to Pennsylvania. Could he drop the boys off 2 days early because the counts is already there? And he said, fine. So Eddie and I brought all the extra gear. You know, I was just like wanted to do camp right. I needed a fan.
You did. I remember the fan.
It was just too hot, and it was like
I didn't know you loved it that much, but I do remember the fan. Like I don't remember you being, oh my god, we got
no one
fan
had a fan.
On.
You can't bring a fan on the bus.
I think it was significant, though. I think when we got to the bunk and we put it on,
how
it was,
could a
it
fan
so
not
better.
Be awesome?
It was
right.
Great.
It was
like,
so
why
awesome.
Not have one? Because my kid insisted.
There was like air conditioning was unheard of in that environment, but a fan, you know,
fan,
like,
oh my god,
movement
work.
Of air. What a fucking advantage
right.
over everybody
amazing,
else.
Where was the fan? Was it between our windows?
It was on your side.
It was on our side.
Pointing at me.
It's all right. We got the benefit of it.
We got it some upstream.
It was the best. And it was on all
pointing
the time.
Pointing at me. I would assume
right
if you brought
me.
A fan, you'd point it at yourself. I wouldn't expect
box,
to do
it.
Was
a box fan.
I brought the fan, and I pointed it at everyone but myself because I'm such a generous soul.
So we get to camp, and then we find out our camp counselor assignment was this guy. It was not Richard. It was this other guy. I believe his name is Ronald. Do you remember his name, Eddie?
Wow.
Ronald.
Marcus. That's right. That's right. I called him Ronald because he looked like Ronald McDonald. I remember now. He had big red hair and he was like had like clown shoes.
Who was he?
He was another British guy. And me and Eddie, and he slept on our bunk.
So
would
you
night.
Guys just nix the deal and go
we
to Dave
went,
or something?
I
so
went
get
right
this
to
guy out.
I did that exactly.
I love that.
I went
thank,
right to Dave.
Thank you.
Do
I guess,
have to
right?
this? This is a great little
would
nugget.
Have had some
I didn't know this shit.
Up with the frosh where he belonged.
Oh, it was a frosh guy.
He was a young kid guy.
Okay.
And he
would have eaten.
Okay. He was very goofy.
Alive.
He was like a clown.
Was he British?
He was British. Mm-hmm. He was part of the British contingent. And we had
freckly with red hair.
He was probably
Hello, Marcus.
Yeah, he was there when we were there. You know, we would see him in the social hall and we wave at him.
So what?
You knew he was mad at us.
We don't remember.
So you just went to Dave and you're like, Dave,
this guy
this is not going to work.
It's for younger kids. This is not for you know, the second
how
year
much
seniors.
Do we owe to Steve Popkin?
Listen,
amongst
a lot.
All the other things.
That's two major things I went to Dave with all within like a week. What? I told him I'm coming to camp and then I told him we need a new counselor.
Right.
And he said, boys, I'll see what I could do. He made no commitment.
And then we showed up, and there was no red guy.
That guy was gone that day. He was gone like an hour later. He like packed his shit up.
Oh, really?
It was very.
How'd you find out about it? Like you just started packing up.
Yeah, he left the bunk, and it was a little embarrassing to me and Eddie.
If I'm Dave,
why else is he? And he got assigned to the frosh. You know, which are
like Dave, work quickly, man.
If I'm Dave, and a couple of guys come to me and tell me this, and they want to. Why wouldn't you accommodate that? Like, why would you even leave that around? There's so many options for what's going on. So
great.
But the beauty of it was, at the time, we represented 100% of the campers.
Right.
We were the only two campers. It was it. It was like, the camp says this guy should not be there. And he made it happen. And he put in Rich, who was the tennis guy. But I think Marcus was the tennis guy.
Rich was great, actually.
Yeah. I think the tennis guy was whoever was our counselor.
Mm-hmm.
That was the part of the counselor.
We didn't have,
to be a counselor. They were half the time they weren't there.
Right.
Who was the counselor next door to us? I'm trying to remember. Who was
it was another British guy named Chris.
Oh, Chris. With the bad
Chris, the soccer feet. Player.
Yes.
He loved the psychedelic first.
He loved the first.
Play the first. Play the first.
Do you remember his feet?
Right. He would say play the first, but then stop playing the first. If you're
no, I don't remember him ever saying stop.
Yes. They once had a revolution against the first.
I love that album. You're going to put that album on?
I do remember a revolution.
L7 had a revolution.
I remember an L7, L8
cut a hole in the wall. It was Gottlieb who did it. And then they had access to seeing us. And then they started putting their broom and other things through the wall.
That's awesome.
Stop playing the Furs! Enough! Because we had played it like 5 times in a row that day.
Right.
Stop! No more Furs! And they sent in 2 guys to like, you know, cover our head with like a towel. And they banged on the wall and they made a hole in the wall. I'm pretty sure Gottlieb led that.
I do remember that.
Do you think there was a rivalry? Like, we didn't have... We definitely didn't have a rivalry with L7, but...
There was no contest. I mean, come on.
It was like one night of friendly rivalry. It wasn't like
the second L7 was already the Noodles guys.
I wonder if some of the other
guys.
I wonder if some of the other listeners
inherited
had more
the Johnny Lieberbaum role, you know, of those guys in the year before that with Neil Later, I think it was.
So let's get to how'd you get a girl into the bunk? Let's just get to the fucking story.
Well, it does play into the revolution. I had a girlfriend in camp, and her name, and you guys probably remember, her name was Phyllis.
Phyllis Scheiner?
I don't remember her last name, but she obviously had made out with some boys before me. I was like, this girl wants to make out with me. She's my girlfriend. And she went for it.
It's a good strategy.
It was my entree into Swatona. I got into the bunks, and I got into the
apparently you got her into our bunk.
Well, that's the best part of the story. But I got her also into the, you know, the what was it, the girls' volleyball court where we used to make out. Mm-hmm. You guys never went
up on the hill.
Yeah. Swat Hill.
No, up on Swat Hill.
You go right. Left, so I got to go. You couldn't go there without a girl. You couldn't go there without a girl. How dare you go there without
unless
a girl?
Unless it's a social and you're playing
volleyball. No, but there was
volleyball.
No social up there.
Yeah.
Not that I remember.
Yeah, at least
now, one time we were up there.
One or two socials did happen up there. It was like co-ed volleyball.
It sucked.
I remember that.
Like, that's not what we want to do. I play sports with the guys all day. I want to try and do the, you know. Social-related stuff. Let's go hang out at the canteen. Let's talk.
Let's talk. Let's have some wine.
Let's make myself try and look really cool so I, like, stand out with the girls.
Now, when Johnny Lieberbaum broke his teeth, which was discussed in a prior episode because of Moira's lighting on the
canteen,
on Swat Road.
By the way, everybody, notice how natural it is for Popkin and Eddie to say Moira. It just happens to be.
It's a 1980 thing.
Unless you were part of it. Every other guest has come on and go, well, Moira.
Well, I remember Jake saying it a lot.
Eddie's on top of it.
Translates into moi.
Yeah, it's been discussed.
None of us
don't know either.
There's no actual origin, but it's moi.
I will say there's an Odd Couple episode that somehow transitions things over into it.
You and Jake love the Odd Couple. You two are like Odd
still
Couple
do.
Fanatics.
There was an Odd Couple.
Believe me.
You are an Odd Couple.
Odd Couple marathon on New Year's Day. I was all over it. Like, one of the greatest shows ever.
I get bored by the Odd Couple fairly quickly.
How dare you?
Well, we were on Swat Hill making out one night. Syphilis and I, and Lieberbaum and a girl and a couple, two other couples possibly.
Was Lieberbaum with Randy Birnbaum?
I mean, I don't remember, but probably if that was his camp girlfriend. And this is when Moose was our counselor. And
they were beaten.
I'm telling you, he put a hood over our head, fed us food. I believe it was donuts, but not feed it to us. Shoved it in
our mouth. Did he waterboard? Was there any waterboarding going on?
He would have.
There was a pillowcase over the head, though.
That's fucking close to waterboarding. It's not good. It's not good at all.
Because he would put the pillowcase over the head, and then like you wouldn't know what he was going to do next. You know?
You were blinded.
Fucking Moose. Who the hell knew?
Well, look, Krause said they put a guy into a duffel bag. And then they had a tribunal. Who do you think had tribunals? That was Weather Underground. Would have a tribunal for
And he was found guilty. And, you know,
they buried him alive.
Moose, I know you're listening. This is Eddie here. And I want to say some positive things because there were plenty. We saw you in the winter. You took us to see the Ramones. You took us to see Cheap Trick. You were great.
Cheap
counselor.
Trick, awesome.
We
you guys
fun.
Went with Moose.
Never really
the two of you
went
ever.
With. Wait, the two of you went with Moose to see Cheap Trick.
The year after he, like I told you, I called him every week. He was in camp only for 3 weeks. Picture day is right around middle.
Right,
of
no,
year.
It's that morning.
Till
he got fired.
Till he got Evan liquored up.
Yeah, we'll have to get into that story.
Well, we did that story.
Well, I have my own take on it. I'll have some information.
Like,
I
think where it gets
weird. I have some information.
We might need to get to some of these stories because I don't think a 4-hour episode is doable.
We're doing it.
A 2-parter, no way. So we're on SWAT Hill, and then the night watchman came on to SWAT Hill, and he saw boys there. And he had a garbage can and a stick.
That's all you need.
Banged it really loud and scared the shit out of us. And we started running as fast as we could. But thank God Lieberbaum was the fastest because he was in front of all of us. And when he hit that chain, I was right behind him, you know, like
You were able
steps.
To slow up.
And he it was like a garrote hitting you in the neck and killing you, basically. And he just hit it. It was a little higher than waist high. And then he flew about 20 feet, and his mouth landed in a rock, like open, I guess. And his 2 to 4 teeth were just hanging out. And it was...
How was he handling it? Was he out of his mind? Or?
Everyone was freaked out. We were all freaked out. It was so much blood, dude. It was so much blood. And then you looked at his teeth, and two were gone, and two were like hanging by a string. And it was like, it was beyond infirmary, but we had to take him right to the infirmary.
Yeah. What
and
else
then they
took
him to a dentist, like in Monticello the next day, I believe. Until his parents might have arranged something.
So you think he stayed overnight, like in the infirmary, and then went to
So. It was really bloody, man. They had to stop the bleeding. It was amazing, you know. It was the coolest thing that ever happened.
His teeth look good now.
Yeah.
If I see a picture of John now, it's like, oh, it's got a good smile.
It was the coolest thing that ever happened in Swago ever. Because it went from, like, making out to, like, bloody violence.
Right. And it was Lieberbaum, like, of all people. Like, it was sort of odd that, like, here's this guy who sort of grew up with this sort of, like, natural sort of, you know, tension with Swago and all of a sudden, he like not intention in the sense that he was sort of like he wasn't the greatest kid. You know, he was a troublemaker, right? Yeah. So then all of a sudden,
but so was I. Though.
No, exactly. So you know.
And well, what were we doing up on the hill with the girls? And where were the good-looking guys like Bender and Pearlstein, who had the best-looking girlfriends?
We were playing knock hockey in the bunk. That's all we had. That's all we had going on. So we just
see. That's the thing. You went after the best-looking girls, where I went after, I guess, the more available girls.
I don't know. I went after whoever. I mean, for the most part, like the early years, it was like whoever like the counselor sort of fixed you up with. Right. Like that was the process.
They fixed you up with the best.
They did. Like until you were like maybe an inter or a senior.
I don't remember your girlfriend as much, and I don't remember Pearl's girlfriend's name or anything, but I just remember he was the prettiest guy. She was the prettiest girl. Mm-hmm. I guess the counselors fixed him up.
Yeah, I guess.
My first girlfriend when I was an inter, and I don't remember her name was Abby. The judge that Krauss was talking about, his name was like Duty or something or shit.
Well, the toilet. That was Jake.
I have to say, I don't really have... I don't. When I think of Steve Popkin and Swago, I don't think of girls. Like, do you think of girls?
I do. I have that one memory of him with some girl in L.A. That's
and we're building up to the story.
I'll admit, I just stepped away. I had to use the bathroom. I'm not going to apologize for that. Did you get to this? Did you get to that? Where were you?
No,
at?
No, we just went over the Lieberbaum story where he
broke his teeth. Okay,
because the guy banged on the garbage can and we got scared. But we were all with girls. Though. There was a third guy and maybe a fourth guy.
Do you, Howie, remember like? Beyond that one story of Steve, which we're going to hear about bringing a girl back to L.A., do you have a recollection of him being dating girls all the time and aggressive? I just don't think of Steve as a girl.
It's not dating girls, but I had a camp girlfriend each year.
No, but that's all I mean. Like, I just don't remember you being involved with any girl on any
level.
They were
the outcasts. You guys didn't notice them. You guys were looking at the
prettiest girls. It didn't even matter about that.
Sorry.
You know, like the mayor was with the mayor of Swatona.
Fucking Pearlstein.
You were the head of the play, and you probably, your girlfriend was the girlfriend.
The mayor was with the mayor of Swatona.
My girlfriend.
Yeah, I'm saying very camp girlfriend. Intimate. I'm going to qualify all this stuff.
Although I will say, I think the Swago guys, they like the Swatona girls more than the Swatona guys. Swatona like Swago.
Although we're learning as we meet these guys from different eras of Swago that there was more going on than there was going on for us.
Nah,
except for
there,
Steve
like,
Popkin.
Is there like an established concept of a camp girlfriend? I mean, I'm not making this up.
Yeah, you go to the hill, you kiss a little, and maybe try.
It was easy to sort of pull off.
You said even cop a feel once, I thought.
Cop a feel, go up a shirt, try and feel some breasts.
Yeah, I might have touched that.
He said titty.
I'm not using that word anymore. I've been informed that it's derogatory. Oh. No, I'm just kidding. Nobody said that to me. Anyway, Steve, back to how you got the girl in the bunk.
So after I had this girlfriend and we liked each other, I was allowed to go. Somehow I was allowed to go to Swatona, sneak in like stealthy.
Well, it's not allowed.
No, I was allowed because there was
sneaking in.
There was counselors there, you know. There were counselors.
So they just accept it was they turned they turned their head.
Girlfriend, but I had a partner, and it must have been Lieberbaum because it wasn't him, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Gottlieb, but I don't think so.
I don't see Gottlieb going.
First of all, how would I even know how to get to Swatona? You know, to a girl.
There's only one road.
No, but to get to a certain bunk.
I wouldn't know how to get there.
Right, exactly. How did he leave us?
So nobody actually ever answered this. Is like the top bunk at Swatona L8 as well?
Were there bunks L at all? I mean, was it L for Lodge?
I don't know. What was the
Deva, please fill us in.
Facebook listeners, please let us know.
See, there's so much of Swatona that we have no idea about. So they were together.
Who will there be a Swatona guest on the ski slope?
Who would be, to be perfectly honest, if I had to ask you, who would be the, I mean, nothing. I'm sure
she could tell us the whole makeout side from the girl's point of view.
Dave is a nice girl. I always liked her. But I don't know. Is that where we should go with this? Like, to just have a I don't know. I don't know.
Look, the girls knew about the makeout stuff better than us. They knew what was going on.
I think that's
initiating
the case.
I think for the most part, at least during our era, I don't think the girls gave a shit about the boys. I think Howie was saying.
Yeah, I think the guys got more wrapped up into it.
But I don't think
they told me to come to their bunk and visit them. And when I get there, what's going on? They're all changing. They were in various states of dressed, but some undressedness.
Look, let's
bras were flying, panties, shorts.
Putting the sexually advanced Swatona girl that you met aside.
No, this was in a bunk of eight girls.
Three of them.
No, eight girls were in a bunk. They were all there.
Popkin, John Yunus, it was all happening for everybody.
News,
what
man.
The fuck?
Well, Lieberbaum's an obvious choice of a guest. I mean, he is, you know, was there forever.
You got to get
well
the phone in technology.
If the phone thing works, we're going to have him on.
But he's in New York, too.
Sorry. So, I'll make sure to give up my weekend in the Hamptons so that Lieberbaum could be my guest.
Maybe he comes in on a Tuesday.
I would. I don't go to the Hamptons. I would love to.
So I'm at the bunk with the girls, and they're getting dressed and making themselves pretty. So it must have been to go to the canteen.
This story is like almost surreal to me. Like, what? You
and
just
the counselors
to music.
Were there.
You and Eddie hung out and smoked weed and listened to music. I don't remember this shit.
Yeah, when I visited my sister.
You do have?
I do.
No, I don't mean that.
I remember the story.
No.
I do.
Back to your sister. What did you say about your sister?
Brother-sister day, he would go to Swatona.
Oh. Brother-sister day, that was it. You weren't sneaking there at night with Steve.
That wasn't very erotic.
And I was...
No, that really
someone
went
me
the wrong direction for Vicky Mormon for that.
We almost got kicked out of camp because somebody thought we took a boat across to Swatona.
Is she happy?
I remember that. Yeah.
Is she happy with her boyfriend? Just kidding. Keep going.
You can get her number. She's probably on Facebook, too.
I'm sure I could Facebook her. All right, let's move
along.
Maybe
she'll be a guest.
So... We went.
That's who we'll get as our. How many years did your sister even go to Swatona?
A year or two?
Like
for
a few?
Maybe three.
That's
long enough.
You started Eagle Year?
Yes, I did.
You were in my bunk Eagle Year. That was when we first met. I know you for a long time. I know you even longer than Howie was.
Same year.
Eagles, man.
Yep. 76 trombones.
Led the big.
We had a good, like, it was me, you, and, like, the Misfits a little bit.
Yes.
And one of the jocks and the Misfits.
Well, the new guys anyway.
Who was the other guys in our bunk? It was another guy from where I grew up. I'm trying to remember who. Was Bruce Aaronwald in our bunk that year? Was that
the name's familiar?
He grew up in Bridgewater.
I think he was an inter.
I think he was an inter. Yeah. Doug Turetsky.
He was from something really.
Bruce Gropper.
David Drucker.
Bruce Gropper.
Do you remember Rich Preminger, our counselor?
Sure.
He used to hate when I would, like, he hated that I wouldn't want to wake up when he wanted me to.
I remember the time he held your arm.
He was pressing against
minutes.
The fucking metal on the cot. It was
torture, I'm telling you, torture.
Do you remember when Les Miller slapped him in the face?
Of course.
Oh, my God.
That was
Oh, my God, man.
I felt so bad for the guy.
He's coaching a basketball team, and Les is ref.
That was awesome.
If someone did that to your kid now in a camp, would you put up with
that? Well, this is a counselor. This isn't even a kid.
My lawyer would be on it.
Yeah, exactly.
He's a group leader to a counselor.
He's allowed to, right? How great, he's allowed to assault
him. Assault.
How great was that? How great was
you guys
that?
I felt bad for Rich. I remember. I was like, oh, shit, that sucked. Because he was being a little douchey with the overcoaching and stuff, but it wasn't deserving of getting slapped in the face like that. And it was
Rich
like a
Preminger had a very particular, like, gait, like walk. Like, I feel like I remember his posture was a little, am I right about that?
Yeah.
Like, he was like a little, like, stood up, like, almost like
something
straight
a little,
up kind
little
of.
Feminine
like,
is he British?
Right.
No, Rich was not. No, he was. Let's find him on
he
fucking
came back
Facebook.
The next year to be a group leader for a younger group.
He did? He
yes.
was back the next year?
That sounds
really? Cool. I don't remember like, that
you know,
at all.
I would get it on a multiple choice test, but I wouldn't be able to get it on an essay. Yeah.
Thanks for clarifying.
Just wanted to let you know about my level of knowing that story.
In a Rorschach's test, I wouldn't do very well, but if it was multiple choice, I'd be good.
So the girls were getting dressed and to go to the canteen, but I was going on a date. And all the girls loved it, and the counselors, they loved it, that there was one of the girls was going on a date.
What do you mean the date? What does the date mean?
Well, all the girls were going to the
canteen.
And you're going
but
where?
I
where
was
is
going
your date?
To SWAT Hill.
She's bypassing the social completely.
Right. Just, well, it's on the way, basically. We go there to make out
like
first
this,
and then go to the...
What was her name again?
Phyllis.
This is where Phyllis departs from the trip.
No,
Phyllis,
yeah.
Why don't you go wait up on the hill while we bring the rest of the girls over to the canteen?
Yes.
So you can wait for Steve.
No, me and her left to get. I walked somehow with the girls and their counselor, and we veered off to the right.
This was planned out,
and they all went straight. Yes, it was a date.
A date. But
how'd you communicate the date to each
a
other?
Date.
Like,
she told me to come to the bunk. Okay. That's all I can remember.
All right.
this
happened
ridiculous.
Twice because it was more. It was
40
a different
years
girl.
Later.
It was
whatever.
The second
this
girl
is
I did
it more
with
ridiculous.
Too. It was a friend of the first girl. So we
okay,
went.
Okay, so
to
your date is that you're going to meet on the volleyball court up on the hill.
No, we went to. I escorted her there. I picked her up.
Escorted
at her.
That's very.
I picked her up at our
very
house.
Very gentleman of
in a
you.
Carriage
you,
with a
did
horse.
Did you open the door for her?
I opened the door to SWAT Hill.
My lady, veer to
look,
the
let's
left.
Let's face it. Once a girl went up with you there and she wanted to go, it wasn't like you forced her. They wanted to go there to make out. That
yeah.
was what it was for.
Yeah.
Of course.
I didn't make that up. You guys knew that before when you were kids.
I didn't make that up either.
Right. So she's like, let's go there. I was like, okay, let's go there.
Very agreeable.
Phyllis and Steve are now on the hill.
So we're up there making out and touching and stuff.
Touching.
Yeah.
All right. No, that's a good, very general term.
There was some touching involved.
It's
probably literal. They were probably touching.
Then what happened was we went to the canteen to take a break.
Ooh.
To continue our journey.
Just
I had to get her on
I'm
the
sure,
it's consumed it
some, I'm sure many years later, you now know, looking back, that was dumb.
That was a bad idea.
You don't break.
Suddenly,
oh, let's go to where everybody is and
yeah,
where they could break is. Up everything that's going on right now.
That was really stupid.
That was dumb. That was a rookie move, but you
but
were
somehow,
rookie.
When we got there, you know, the people started making fun of us, the girls and the guys.
That was because they were jealous.
Right.
And I'm being honest about that.
Right.
Well,
what were they making
jealous.
Fun of? Because I knew you were there, were you disheveled?
Yeah, just some more. No, not like that. Well, just like Steve and Phyllis kissing in a tree. Whatever.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's like,
it can't get upset about that. Somewhere.
At 14, they were still going with that.
Somehow, I think they still did that. I think Dava was there. She wasn't an She wasn't an
Nah, I can't imagine.
Eddie, you loved Dava, didn't you? What? Can't we go there? It's in all the years. It's all your wife's going to be pissed. What's
I
going on?
Loved anybody.
Not love. I mean literal love. Look at Eddie. He's like, let's not say it that way, Alan. It's not love.
So we're like, let's get out
you
of
You had
here.
Your little crush back then on David, no?
That happened.
What can I say? She was.
She was beautiful, little,
in
cute little girl.
Yeah, she was cute. At the time, she was interested in another kid that.
Who was she?
So
who is she?
Let's face it. She wasn't cute. She was the cute.
He has by now.
Dave is still adorable. You see her picture.
She's
she looks kind of young. Like she looks. She still looks like she was when she was.
In the words of Redbank, she's adorbs.
I don't know what that means, but
it's a compliment.
Redbank?
No, Redbank is you know.
A Redbank is that the guy? He says adorbs. He's young enough where
right.
he thinks he can do a thing
he
like
that.
I don't like the ridicule you're getting in the canteen, though. I don't like that you've come back from
ridicule,
this
so
moment.
I'm like, let's get
no, let's
out of
be
here.
Honest. That was nervous. That was jealous ridicule.
Let's get out
that
of here.
That was like, wow, Steve Popkin was up on the hill with a girl.
Mm.
I don't
well,
remember
the girls
any
knew
of this.
It, but the guys
any
didn't know it.
Yeah.
This is second year, senior year.
Yes. L.A.
I remember none of this.
This is L.A. So then I took her into the woods of the canteen. If you go
to
in the canteen,
from the
if you go straight, you're going back to Swago. But if you go right, you're in some kind of woods that leads you to, I think, the Swago Road or something.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the Swago Road. There's off the Swago Road. There's straight back to Swago. There's right. left back to the Girl Scout.
Right. It was the third road that we just mentioned.
You went to the right.
Right. Went to the right. Took her in the woods, literally. It was like poison ivy and stuff, you know. There was nowhere to sit. It was just like a rock with like leaves.
Do you remember the big log stump that was outside of the canteen?
Like, yeah, that was cute.
Cat a corner to like
to both roads.
So we're trying to like make out in like this dense brush. And it wasn't working, but then I was like, I had this brilliant idea. Everyone's in the canteen right now. Let's go to the bunk. My bunk. Your bunk. Your bunk. And it, apparently it had never been done before. So I took her back to the bunk, and no one was there. Not one person. It was quiet. And I took her.
I lit the candles.
I took her on my bed.
Some psychedelic furs
on. I put
on
a little Frank Sinatra.
The record was on, I'm sure, even though I don't remember that. And I laid down in the bed with her, and we started making out and touching.
He likes to say that.
Hold on. Let me qualify this whole story. Please. Liquor was involved.
Nope.
Really? Where?
We were drunk.
Where, that I happened up on the hill?
When you got back.
Yeah, by the way,
where did you acquire the liquor from Moose? So this was the second offense?
Second year senior was more, might have been more of a Kenny Linsky kind of operation.
Uh-oh.
You could trade things for wine.
Yeah, you could get Southern Comfort for trading stuff, or you could just buy it. You could line up a counselor on his day off, give him $10, and he would buy you whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
As long as his allotment wasn't taken up. So you had to kind of time it right.
Mm-hmm.
Use $5. Could you get me on Tuesday?
I don't think I was thinking about drinking at that point. I mean,
senior party was really it.
Yeah, senior party. Yeah, I'm really going to get to that too. That was classic. That was a classic night. That was the most classic
with the
night.
Bubble
of all time.
Gum flavor thing.
Right? Remember when our bubble gum flavor stuff? Just put a couple drops. It's not too strong. I'm like, holy fuck!
Smelled
the entire bunk like bubble gum for days.
But who else brought? You know,
bubblegum
like,
smells good.
Who else brought deodorizer? Who brought deodorizer to camp to make sure it didn't smell bad?
I don't believe I've ever seen a deodorant.
It was too powerful.
That's that pungent and that packs that much power.
To this day, if I smell bubblegum, to this day, that's where I go.
It smelled like bazooka joint.
But that wasn't
because
of the senior party,
but times a thousand.
It was because of weed.
No, it wasn't. Well, I brought it because of weed.
What was the reason you did it that day? Were you over?
Rich Lewis, our counselor, woke up and just threw up.
Oh, I remember that. Yes.
Good morning, boys.
No, this is the guy we traded Marcus for.
None of us would clean it up. Rich
and I wonder,
up. No. Pearl cleaned it up. No. Bender cleaned
I'm
up. No.
Cleaning up a fucking guy's puke.
A British counselor.
Well,
I'm a camper. I'm not required to clean up the man's puke.
It was next to you, and you were complaining the most. Though.
I appreciate you. Now, in retrospect, I would take that bubble gum, that intense bubble gum smell.
No, that was the thing. It was worse. Oh, it was worse.
I don't know.
It
I
like
think if we had
a
smell
gum.
Of puke, like
the bubble
it
gum
have
wasn't
been.
Bad, but mixed with
what
the puke,
was
it
what was that?
A,
just a stomach
a
thing,
reaction.
Or did he drink too much at my place?
Most guys used to drink till they vomited every night. The British guys. If you remember, there was a younger counselor once that once woke up in our bunk.
Yes,
he was from Hong Kong, and he got fired that day.
I do remember that.
I thought it was the night watchman.
They're like, "Where's this guy? He didn't come home last night. He was not Frosch, but more like Rangers or Eagles."
And was it the red-haired guy?
No, it wasn't the red-haired guy. I forgot his name, but he was part of that crowd. And then they were like, he's passed out.
Just
in our
totally
bunk.
Missed that.
We couldn't wake him up.
I remember. He came in like at 3 or 4 in the morning. He was
came
like out of his mind.
To drink and smoke with Rich, mm-hmm. You know. And then he just passed out. He went to sleep in the alley of in between your feet and his feet.
Mm.
He was like this.
That was it.
But he didn't wake up at Flagpole, though. I mean, he could have covered himself if he just
it's
woke
amazing
up.
How much shit happened in like 8 weeks.
Amazing, dude.
It's amazing. Just amazing. Like fucking volumes of shit that would go on over one summer.
So much stuff. Well, anyway, just to finish up the story with the girl, because it really didn't get that interesting. But I was definitely, we weren't going to have sex or anything, but
we were touching.
Definitely
you
getting,
John Eunice,
you were getting below the belt, you know? We got below the belt.
Right.
We get below
we
the
got
belt.
Below the belt.
Yes.
Thanks for qualifying.
No,
okay.
It was real. I mean, come on. I'm not making this up.
It's
wait,
real,
just
though.
To be clear, you got below her belt or she got below your
both.
Belt? Both belts.
And then I look up, and in the corner of my eye, I see Jeff Gottlieb's eyeball.
Up in the wood thing that he opened up?
Yes, in the hole that he opened up when he had a revolution.
Doing surveillance.
And
you know what? He was sniping way back when. Just like,
I see his eyeball, and I knew it was him. And then suddenly, there's at least 4 guys in that bunk, and they're all just like, fuck her, fuck her, fuck her.
Oh, great.
And then Gottlieb grabs the broom and puts it through the hole as if
simulating that thing.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. And then we came to because we were both fairly drunk.
Well,
at first we didn't know what was happening, and then I'm like, "Let's get the hell out of here." Then we just ran
to Steve and Phyllis.
We just ran. Did you walk her back to her bunk?
No, I ran out into the roads and just pointed to SWAT, and then I came back and I had to high five some guys. Let's face it, I had to get my props.
Right. Hey, everybody!
But Gottlieb was leading it, and then he had a whole crew of guys in his bunk, which might have included you guys, and they were just chanting and screaming. And I still wanted to go through with it. I didn't want to stop, but then I realized this is really bad. This is terrible.
Awesome.
You guys are still talking about it today.
It's good stuff.
I have a question. Wait. Ed, do you mind if I veer in another direction? So we were talking before you got here about how much our musical influence came from Steve. You ended up like making music, having a band, which I always loved your band. I thought it was cool what you did. You were truly into it. You loved doing it. You really were doing it in the most genuine way. I always love that. Was Steve also like a musical, like did he introduce you to a lot of the music as well, like, or was it
he did.
Yeah,
he definitely did.
How many years were you like, Howie, did you play in Indecision for a little bit or no?
I was the original bass player, but I didn't have a bass.
Played with us for
so I played the bass lines on a guitar
days.
That was my first foray into being a bass player.
I don't know if you know this, Eddie, but every year on our trip, I think you do know
I
this.
I do know this.
We play. We love this. We
remember the places.
You are
the
not
highlight
only is remember
of the van ride
it's
up.
Not just like a song we play. We set the entire. So we all go up to camp out on the Delaware River near where Oswego is. Every year, Howie, me, and a group of guys do. All our brothers. It's a great trip. And on the trip, I drive the van, but and I love it. And the culmination. There's a soundtrack running during this entire trip, and the culmination of that soundtrack is us pulling in like a few miles from Calicoon, pulling into Peck's the Market because we stopped there to get our food, playing Remember the Places, and it's awesome. We have the best time with it. It's fucking amazing, isn't it? Like
it is,
and we just know it's you. It's awesome.
It's been a tradition for a lot of years. It's the very peak of the van ride up, which is
it's they're drunk and I'm fine. I'm driving them and they're just fucking wasted and it's and I
great,
don't
guys,
duh,
I,
in my da,
da, da, da, I appreciate da, da. It. I tell my sons there are actually a couple of other people out there that know these songs.
Do you ever listen to your old music?
Yeah, sometimes.
That's
I
cool.
Go through little phases.
Awesome, awesome.
When did you start playing the guitar? Because I was thinking today, actually, like not only the that we sort of appreciated music for listening to it, but that we actually started playing it a lot more too. Like you too, actually, picked up a guitar.
Because of you guys, I did.
Right,
I just
right.
wanted
so
to like.
I learned.
Do
I definitely
a bit.
Learned after you, Howie, because I remember when as soon as I met you at Swago.
So you could just
right.
pick up the guitar and play whatever.
Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I learned a little. I think I was learning. In camp, maybe my first year senior.
Who taught you how to play, though? Who was?
I took a few lessons from a couple of guys here or there.
And just did your own thing.
By waiter year, though, you were playing. You got it, like, within 1 year.
Right. You got really dedicated to it. You became, you knew how to play really quickly.
We were able to play the Swago Talent Show with
right.
Jake.
We wrote the Color War songs.
We wrote the Color War songs, too. The All Clash, Alma Mater, and Mars.
And just like the Psychedelic Furs, in the first year of your band, you had a sax player, didn't you? And then
yes,
there was no more sax player
we had
after
sax
that.
For
sax adds early to
part.
Sax
it,
adds to a lot
did.
Of songs. I think people
good.
It's an underrated instrument sure. for like
horns. Totally. I mean, if you listen to like the Stones, "Exile on Main Street," when you can put the horns in correctly, it's
well. Howie had a guitar at camp, if I remember.
I did
acoustic guitar. Used to play these boots are made for walking
with Dave Jacobs. That was,
that was
our,
your signature song.
Our inter sing song.
But I think Eddie learned how to play on that guitar, if I remember correctly.
Really?
Like, that was his first chords. Because he learned in Swago, like he said.
Did you borrow the guitar from me? Was that possible? I'd be honored.
Not a borrow, just more like,
No, I'm
not. Oh, it's sitting well, there. I'm going to play it right now. Howie, I'd like to rent some
I remember
time
that.
On your
rent,
guitar.
Right?
I think
rent.
I brought up one.
That was the next year you brought your own.
All right. sounds good. I know Howie had the Beatles songbook.
I did. I had a couple of fake books with me, yeah.
Fake books? Why were they fake?
Well, I know,
those
are
what they called them, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I don't even know quite why, but...
Up.
Oh, we got some mic adjusting going on.
Sorry, bro.
Sorry.
We're going to take a quick break.
All right, that's enough. Weeze on.
Do you guys remember when Dave Blumstein came to our bunk?
I do not recall that.
Well, there was this guy, Bert?
Bert Rosenblum.
He was Audrey Rosenblum's son. I don't think he was in the camp or had worked for the camp.
I think he worked for the girls' camp.
Yeah, he had worked for the girls' camp. Yeah. And he came into our bunk one day as like a legacy.
Yeah.
He claimed to look at his graffiti and plaques.
That's why he was in there to see his
shit?
That's
what he said. Mm-hmm. What he was doing
wasn't the real reason, though.
Motherfucker's front.
Right. That was his fake entree, because why do we want to hang out with him? We barely knew who he was.
Right.
And anyway, his legacy was
Let me be clear. We didn't want to hang out with him.
Yeah. Why do we want to hang out with him?
But if he's just going to come in and look at his graffiti, right?
Right.
He's going
to come in and look. Do your 5 minutes. It was there. I'll give him that.
Get out of here and let us fucking move on in our lives.
Graffiti was pretty important in Swago, and you would see like something from 1962 or whatever, you know?
Okay. So he comes in.
Came in, and then he left. It was like, cool, we met a legacy.
He saw his name and he left?
He was no moose, you know, but he was someone who...
I don't think he was as much a legend. He was just Audrey's son.
He had graffiti, that was it. You know, he was Audrey's son? And she was the owner of Spitona.
She managed Spitona, right?
She was like president. She wasn't an owner. Well, no, that was Rita. I think Audrey was the owner.
Wasn't Rita Blumstein?
No, there was a Rita Swedlow, Alex's mom.
She was the
She
owner
was
of
like the head counselor.
No, I think
she
you're right.
Stan
I think you're
Feld.
Right.
Audrey, I believe, was the other. She was a 50-50 owner, I believe, with Blummer on Swatona. If anyone knows more information on that, please post it on the Facebook page.
So he came in the bunk and we chatted him up.
Do you like that or should I bail out?
No, it was fun. It was good.
It was one of those fun, like meeting a new guy kind of thing, you know, whose name was in graffiti. Then suddenly, this is only the second day of camp, I believe, or the first or second or third day of that year, that Dave Blumstein came to our bunk and he said he wanted to speak to me and Eddie. Dave Blumstein, the god of Swago,
came down from his perch.
Was he angry or calm?
He was just an old guy.
I've never seen him that angry. Even when he was angry.
No, he was angry.
He got angry at me one time.
When he kicked me out of
camp,
he was
get
angry.
Hold on.
Like, he was angry.
Excuse me one sec. What did he get angry at you about?
I struck out in softball and somebody said something to me and I said, like, fuck you back to them. And this was like in front of Dave's house. And
he
Dave
came right
out of his house.
Really?
He was like, who said that? It was like fury. And I was just like, I raised my hand and we went into his living room and had a chat.
Son, there are certain times that you just don't use those words.
Nah, he was mad.
What was the chat? I want to hear more about
it. I don't really remember. I think he docked me from a social.
That's fucking awesome.
He had that authority.
Back to you, Dave.
Okay.
Well, he was the...
Did what he could do.
So
he was Ja.
Dave called me and Eddie out of the bunk. And we were like, what? And then he cut to the chase. He said, you boys, he called us boys.
Well, fair enough. We were boys.
Pack up your bags. We're like, what? He's like, I want you to pack up your bags and go home. I'm going to call your parents to come pick you up. And this is literally was like the first day of camp, I think.
We just unpacked.
He kicks the fucking... He kicks the counselor out for us.
Right. This is the same year.
And Thursday he's showing up and going, hey, boys, it's over?
And he's like, we know that you and Eddie took a boat, which was, I think, a canoe or something, you know, and went to Swatona in the middle of the night and did a Swatona raid.
I do remember this.
Yeah, that's exactly what you two guys would do.
Right. I mean, you know, maybe after I met Phyllis, I would have tried that.
Phyllis.
It's only
just to get in a canoe and go over there. It's not really worth it.
And this guy, Bert, who came to our bunk, was there IDing me and Eddie. He was fingering us.
That was the reason
he came to the bunk. Because he was in Swatona. He saw the boat arrive, and he was just finding out who it was so they can get them thrown out.
But just so I understand,
but it turns
you did
out,
or did not do this?
We did not. Come on. We were your friends. You would have known. We didn't do that.
So that was, he just came into ID? Like, these are the two guys?
I guess he was scoping out the whole Swago, but since it looked like older guys, maybe he was starting in L8. And he was like, it's that guy and that guy. He never told us this. And Dave never told us this.
How'd you find out it was Bert? That was the guy that told.
I don't know if we put two and two together or Jake told us.
Okay.
So we're like, what? He goes, you took the... And we're like, what? You know, after you sit down, we're like, really, what? You know?
Sure.
We can't get kicked out for this. Let's do something, you know? Right. Let's get caught smoking weed or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And then we're like, oh, my God. We came back in the bunk. We told you guys. And then Jake was like, look, let me talk to Dave. I'll talk to him. I'm, you know... Super camper. I'm straight. And he went out and talked to Dave.
That was great.
And he gave us a full alibi. He was our alibi. He said I was with him.
And he was.
This is Snake.
He was. This is Larry.
He was asleep right in front.
No, I said this is Jake the Snake.
Oh, right. Jake, yeah. He alibied. He said, nope, Eddie and Steve were with me from the time that you say till the time that he says. And there's no way it was them. And right. Later on, we found out within a week or so later that it was a horse boy and the kitchen boy.
It's always the horse boy.
It was the horse boy and the kitchen boy, nameless, you know, guys. But they must have been a year or two older than us, and we looked old. You know?
Sure.
And so so we got a reprieve.
How did they find out it was those two guys?
We found that out later. I guess
they admitted
found
to it under pressure or something?
But Jake, there was no question when Dave and Jake I alibied us and stuff.
He was like, that was it. You're good to go. So Dave comes back up to you. He's like, you're cool? Like,
right. That was it. Explained. We stayed. You know, it was no big deal. I mean, it was like never really spoken of again, but we did find out later that
saves the bunks. Props to the Snake. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when you have Jake on, I would like to, you know.
Thank you, Larry.
Jake, I understand why. Jake is going to be in town in the October, the month of October.
Yeah, does Jake remember this? I think
we're excited to have our buddy Jake the Snake.
Maybe we'll get the whole bunk together.
Yeah.
Maybe.
We'll come by for the pizza after.
No doubt.
So in the mooning incident that we had.
This was at Camp Equinunk.
Everyone was waiting in the bus. They were waiting for me to finish pitching the game, and then we lost the game. It was over. I finally had to give the last pitch. I didn't want to. We got back on the bus, and I was really angry, and so I mooned the camp, but everyone else joined in, from my memory.
We did.
That everyone else on the bus joined in. So the whole window was like 12 asses. Pointing at the camp.
And it's funny because I remember that sort of being as a good natured thing, like as good natured.
Yeah, it was fun. Mooning was like an animal house.
It was like an evil, disrespectful thing. It was like the things get out of hand.
How evil could it be?
Exactly.
It was a good natured. No,
mooning was an established fun
thing.
And
at that point
do.
In the game, when you had both camps just focused on the softball game, you know, the energy sort of like building up. But it was all fun and comical. It wasn't
for
evil.
for their people to get out of whack over that was ridiculous.
That it was somehow like was a disrespectful thing to the Equinunk owner.
I
like Equinunk, but you know what? Their owner, if it's the same owner, a little sensitive.
I don't think it's not the same owner anymore. Right. No, it hasn't been for years.
You can moon this guy?
We mooned our owner, but they must have called Dave. But. So when we got back in the bus, it was that head counselor. I forgot his name, but he was a one-year guy from Brooklyn. He was like Chris Christie of Swago. He was a big, chubby guy.
Jim.
You remember the guy, Jim?
The guy of the year during the revolution?
No, he was the head counselor in 80.
He was not a Swago person at all.
The guy that would do like be in the HQ and do the lineups and stuff. Remember he challenged Pop into a fight? He's like, we're going to settle this Brooklyn style.
We set up Brooklyn style, yeah, of course.
Oh, that was that the same night?
His name was Jim.
No, that guy is Jim, though. The guy you're explaining, yeah.
He actually challenged me to, I mean, I remember the story.
Yeah, the head counselor saying, he was taking his rings off, I remember.
Why would he want to fight me, though?
I don't remember.
You were abrasive.
And you sort of, I remember you, though, putting your hands behind your back and saying, come on, hit me.
I do, don't you? Hit me. I want to see you do
it. I read Gandhi.
With his hands,
I had read
his
Gandhi
back.
And Martin Luther King. I knew how nonviolence is an effective
Jim,
way.
Hit me. You just hit me.
Settle this
as a New York State lawyer.
Everyone will see. Hit me.
How much would that have been worth to me, Howie, as a New York State lawyer?
Well, back in 1979,
yes.
I thought it was Jim.
I do remember
style.
The rings coming off. He was on the basketball
court. He was a doofus.
You pissed him off, man. You pissed him.
But it would have been, great if he punched me, though.
I would have loved that. That would have been fucking fantastic. That would have been great shit.
And I would have got at least 20 grand, let's face it. Come on. He took his rings off.
In many ways, you just were the predecessor to Holtzman.
Did they want to beat Holtzman?
What was that whole... There's that whole bad boy contingency.
Right.
Yeah.
Moose.
You know, there's
I was the Moose.
No, but post-Moose, pre-Holtzman.
Yeah.
I want to say that I think Steve was most compared to Lippy.
Well, that's the same. You know what? Lippy is green. Like jump ahead a couple of generations, and that was Lippy.
No, I heard the word Lippy a few times, but he, I heard, was just a guy who.
No, I think he took it to a level that you couldn't.
You know,
even
he
imagine.
Was known for overdosing or something at Swago, and something I never was involved with.
I got to give you guys props.
I could always handle my
showing
shit.
Up early. Like
I never threw up. LA I never year. Passed out.
Not even the night with the bubblegum deodorizer was used?
No. Let's get to the senior party. Pearlstein is off one rack. He's
Let's
throwing off the
there.
Porch, vomiting.
I'm vomiting?
You were vomiting like a mad
Jesus
off the porch.
Three Jenny
he
cream
was throwing up. I don't remember what you were. Jake didn't. He probably didn't drink. And I was spinning.
Jake was listening to Herbie Hancock.
Jake listened to George Carlin and Stevie Wonder on his little cassette player while our stereo was on.
That was the amazing part. That he'd have that little fucking thing next to his ear. He'd lean with it like
he was adamant. He's listening to his own stuff.
You know, between his his pillow and his ear was the recorder. And we were listening to the Furs at full volume,
He was protesting us.
And he was listening to either George Carlin, the Beatles.
Like Weather Report, I think.
Weather Report. Or something.
A lot of Beatles. But it's not like we didn't like the Beatles.
No, who doesn't like the
Beatles?
And every
once in a while, we would consent, and then we would play Jake's music on the stereo.
Did we? Yes. Did we try and bring
them? Because we had Beatles albums. I mean, we love the Beatles, too, you know?
Right.
How many albums did the two of you bring up that year?
I would say 100 each.
It was enough, though. It was more albums than I had access to.
Eddie, you brought 100 as well? Like, you had that many?
I don't remember exactly.
For me, that was the beauty of it. Was all of a sudden here I am, because it's like getting an iPod at that age that you have all this music to. So I had at home maybe 15 albums, you know, and it's like greatest hits stuff mostly. So all of a sudden I come up to camp. Now this is like crazy collection of English music.
Howie and
I
both have been into Rhapsody since way back when, and one of the things I love is you pay. It's a subscription service. You pay X per month. You can listen to every fucking song, and I love they do the recommendations. This one's like this, and fine. You just listen to it. You don't have to pay for it.
A lot of great music that way.
You learn and you get a lot of new music. You were that for me. You were my Rhapsody. Exactly. You were my original Rhapsody.
I'm Spotify.
You were. And the stuff held up. You know, it wasn't like, you know, I don't know. Exactly. For some reason, there's more of a pride of that's what I was into as opposed to Styx at the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not to disrespect Styx.
Well, Adamant, I know, was mentioned.
Adamant was mentioned.
It's not one of my favorites.
No, I know.
No, but you know.
No, the stuff took the steps of time. I mean, let's face it, all the music we liked then is important music now. And then a lot of groups like Green Day and stuff are mentioned the same stuff, you know, influence them.
Yeah.
There's some influential musicians. Well, getting back to how many records we had a whole cubby of records.
That was only a minute ago.
Four shelves in the cubby.
Right. Did you have a separate cubby?
We had a separate cubby, which I set up because we only had five campers.
Yeah, we did have there were times where I bet you there were 12 people in that bunk. Double deckers and the whole shit. Yeah.
When I went back to Swago, some of the interbunks had double deckers still in them. What were they called though? Bunk beds. Well, there was one that we had, didn't have a camper, and that is where our trunk went.
Mm-hmm.
And inside the trunk was the weed. It was divided into 8 weeks. And it was hidden under sports equipment. And no one ever knew it was there, which was good. Next to that, and on top of that, was the stereo.
Where were you going? You were just going to the waiter bunk to smoke the weed? So you had to bring in the waiters all the time?
We did it in our bunk.
8 weeks.
If you remember, I had a football that you could put a joint into.
I think I do.
It was a power hitter, and you could squeeze it.
I do recall that.
And we would throw it from bed to bed. And that was what the guy from Hong Kong smoked when he passed out in our bunk. Because he came to our bunk and he's like,
"Well, comes full circle.
Let's come, you know, let's smoke weed." And I'm like, "Okay, here's the football."
Do you know American football?
It was 2 a.m. We didn't want to do it. I'm like, "Here's your football," you know. And he passed out. Anyway, the stereo was on top of the trunk. Trunks, there was no trunk ever in a bunk, if you remember. There was a trunk house.
Yeah, you put it under the social
hall. Under the social hall.
I kept a special trunk.
Yes, that's to stay with me.
It was a Donald trunk.
Where did you have this trunk?
It was where a bed would be, but we didn't have a camper to fit it.
I do remember you having a trunk. I do remember you having a whole separate area.
It was a full stereo. Because
we really only, only had five people in the bunk.
We were one camper down.
Dude, do you remember how great it was? You'd open that cubby, and it was just a cubby full of records.
It was four shelves in it.
I just let you guys do your thing with it, though. I would just enjoy
it. It was already there.
No, I never picked. I would just absorb whatever you would be playing.
It was already there.
I got into Armed Forces big for a week or two.
I already screwed in the hasp.
Kept throwing that on.
My lock and everything.
Is that where we started to listen to Elvis?
Yeah, Armed Forces. Like Oliver's Army. I just fell in love
over
with that
over and
song.
Over and over again. And then the first album. You know, those are the only two albums that were out.
Right.
No, three albums.
Three albums.
The third one was the one you're mentioning. And then we saw him play, of course, right after camp, too.
Mm-hmm.
So another story about getting fingered.
It's amazing. I still listen to all these people. People that I met during your time, our time, are who I still go back to.
Well, here's a band that didn't stand the test of time, but I know you guys remember it because Lieberbaum always mentioned it to me.
Who's that? The Jacks.
Signature band. The Good Rats.
Yeah.
I don't even
remember. I was never into the Good Rats.
Remember that over and over again?
I don't remember them at all.
I think Lieberbaum picked it
Lieberbaum
up.
Lieberbaum liked them, but
I liked them. I had the WLIR stuff, Tasty and all this stuff. I used to really like it, but I don't remember that being Signature. But he'll Facebook me now saying that's Signature band.
I know some guy just died from them, right? Lead singer?
The Good Rats?
Also, but I don't remember being popular in Swago.
Okay. I don't remember that at all, yeah.
It was a year before, we were in L7. You guys were also not
exactly like the Boomtown Rats.
You know what was funny? Like, the guys who were a year behind us, like, David Allen, Russ, more Russ,
Chris Schachter. All those guys.
They were like year or two behind. They were like into like the British Invasion. They weren't into the same level of sort of hardcore stuff that we were into. They were
more electronic.
More electronic. And I like some of that too.
They like Stiff Little Fingers, though. But they love the Clash. Like I remember they wrote a thing
but they
LA.
Like
Joy
Division.
Do you remember the LA Graffiti they wrote? And it was all the bands we loved.
Yeah, they definitely like the more electronic.
They love Stiff Little Fingers, though. Like that was their Clash. It was like they had to have a band that was
Stiff Little Fingers is Clash-like.
No, they are.
They're not the Clash, but...
Holtzman played me in a Razor in Color War. I don't know if you remember.
I still remember that.
But
yeah.
He wore a blue bathrobe and goggles. That was my signature,
that was your look.
Outfit, my look. And it was
that's right. You were a bathrobe dude.
There was a Popkin Day. Do you remember? There was like
it was Popkin Day?
1983. There was Popkin Day. Yeah. The seniors all dressed up as you. They put robes on and goggles on.
What was with the goggles? Where did that come from? Were you such a swimmer?
It was like Kurt Rambis. It
was punk. You know? You just wore what you had.
Excuse me, guys.
To line up.
I'm going to do 50 laps. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Let's face it. If Holtzman put on goggles and a blue thing.
That's all you need.
Did you know it was me?
Yes.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yes. It was an easy imitation at that point.
And Steve Popkin Day. I do remember hearing about that.
Yeah. And that was like years later. Like, it was like 3 years after you left.
You know that what we're talking about is like 31 years ago.
I hate doing the math backwards. I hate going, okay, so that's 1981 and 33 years from
now. 31 now.
So we had all the records.
79. What would that be? 89. Fuck it. It's a long time ago.
We had the records in the bunk, and one day, out of nowhere, Keith McCoy shows up in our bunk.
Hey.
And he's spotting us. He's spotting me and Eddie, checking out our records.
Oh, I remember this.
And he thought we stole like 20 of his records.
Right.
And he thought he'd find them, which we did not do.
Right.
I'm going to admit to...
You guys got accused.
I'm going to admit to what I stole.
Now Boat's stealing records.
What did you steal?
I stole some people's t-shirts.
Did you steal my High Times t-shirts?
I don't think so. Yeah. I stole some from Peter Shapiro, I remember. Right. But you guys went on...
He was
on,
half your size.
You guys went... I used it to trade to like Lieberbaum or something.
It was
remember T-shirt
tool.
Day? Was there a T-shirt
Marble
trading day?
Marble Day. No, I don't remember. It was like the last day of camp.
It was called Marble Day, but you traded your t-shirts.
Traded the t-shirts,
college shirts.
I like that. It's a good little tradition.
But preempted it because Eddie and I didn't go on the canoe trip the second year.
Why you were banned?
No, we just didn't
just
go.
Just chose not to go.
We were so bad. We said we didn't want to go, and they're like, okay. They didn't even force us.
They're like, we don't need the headache. Thank you.
Exactly. They were happy. So we were there with...
But we don't need the liability.
But we
thank
went.
You.
That's a little...
But at that point, we had access to everyone's t-shirts because not everyone locked their shit
did
up.
Did anybody like the canoe trip? I did
no, you
not
really
like
hated
it.
I guess I hated it too. We didn't go.
You didn't go. I fucking hated it. I went somewhere.
I don't know how like two guys got out of it and we still went. Like,
no, because we were bad and they didn't want us there.
All right,
but I stole the t-shirts and then I'm pretty sure I got caught by Pete Shapiro, I think. I had to give them back.
We shouldn't be stealing them.
So wait, just refresh my memory. Inter-year, who was our group leader?
Eddie, the historian?
Was it Dave Baker?
That's what I thought
it was. So inter-year. So he was our Ranger year counselor or Eagle year counselor. He was in our bunk Eagle year with Rich Preminger.
Right.
I think he may have been group leader 2 years.
He was the water ski guy. Then.
Yes.
And then
group leader 2 years?
Eagles and Rangers.
So he was our our inter-group leader. First year, senior year, Pete Shapiro was our...
Shapiro, Stellerman. What about Ranger year?
And Stellerman was our senior year leader.
Oh, Harvey Schnall.
Yes.
Oh, how can you forget Harvey Schnall? That guy was a great guy. You
know I traded a lot of cassettes with Harvey Schnall.
He was a cool guy, actually.
Right?
It's Harvey Schnall, if you're character. Out there, where are you, man?
Did you guys ever
talk
go to
us,
the
baby.
Married counselor like bunk area behind the freshmen's where he lived with his wife?
No.
Behind the freshman bunk? There was nothing behind it. That was like the road.
There was a little area somewhere back there.
I think, yeah, back behind, like, the golf course there was.
Is that where it was?
Yeah.
Behind the golf course there
He's
was, like
come to my bunk. I want some of your music. This is the group leader of the whole camp. He's like, bring your whole box of cassettes. And so I brought my box. I opened it up.
Wait, was he head counsel for the entire camp?
I think so.
Maybe
yeah, he
year.
Was. I
into
feel
year,
like Harvey Schnall was head
I do.
Counsel.
I think he was. He had real thick, black, dark hair.
He had that
hair.
Funny little goatee.
He looked like a Groucho, like a modern-day Groucho a little
but
bit.
But somehow he was onto me. He was bring
He's a funny guy.
He goes, bring all
he
your music.
He had a good attitude. I
liked
him.
He was great.
It was one of those box cassettes, but I had two layers, and I had them all labeled in WLIR concerts, all typed on labels.
You know what's interesting? Like, most of the people that we've been discussing tonight, many of them, like a lot of the people who went to Swago don't have a fucking clue who they were. When was Harvey Schnall there? The last 4 or 5 years at the most?
No, but he was a big guy, though, my first year.
For those last 4 or 5 years. Like, we're, like, in... We were the end of Swago. And No, just making that point that it points out that the continuum didn't go on, and others. Yeah. I don't think Krauss knows who we're talking about. I don't think a lot of the guys who've been on the show, many of the people listening, even know who we're talking about. Which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, there's like these sporadic entrances and exits of people instead of this continuity.
Right, but there is
Harvey Snow was pretty cool, though. I liked him. I do.
Yeah,
remember.
So he picked out about four or five cassettes in the Marble Day, you know, style. I picked out four or five of his cassettes, and I think one of them was Graham Parker.
I remember his wife looked like Graham Parker. She had that head with the tight blonde curly hair.
What about the other Harvey?
Harvey Romanoff.
He was there around the same time as Schnoll, right?
No, there were two Harveys, and they couldn't be more different. There was Harvey Schnoll and Harvey Romanoff. Harvey Romanoff had, like, the hot Asian wife, remember?
Oh, that's okay.
he had, like, a box.
I knew there was an Asian wife involved. Yeah, they had their own bunks. It was, like, a little bungalow where they lived.
Yeah, but I think Alan's right. I think there was more towards rivalry as opposed to the freshman bunks.
That was fun.
Yeah. How about the infirmary? You ever stay in there?
I did once to watch the... to watch the All-Star game. I got sick.
That was a big to-do in Chicago, was to see the All-Star game. To at least hear it.
I pulled it off, but of course, I'm sure. I was faking it, obviously.
I'm going to pause for a second.
Right, that's enough. Hey, so this is awesome. We're fucking having a great time here with... This is the crew.
This is L8.
It's basically this, and then it's somewhere over there. Jake
right.
is listening
if
to the
Jake
Beatles.
If Jake was here, he would have been
or
over
George
there.
Or George Carlin or something.
Nah, he's with
listening
us.
In now.
But
he's
Jake is a
us,
great guy, though.
Of course.
He saved you, man.
Guy.
We wouldn't have
awesome
had a phone
guy.
I mean...
Awesome guy.
He proved himself in the music business himself after all that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
After saying how our music sucked. And how his music was better, to the point where he had to listen to it on a cassette.
Right. I remember the Frank Zappa stuff,
No
though.
Better, no worse, man. Dude liked what he liked. Likes what he likes. Respect that. All good.
Moss was into a lot of good music. He had records and stuff.
You think so?
Yeah, he'd just start pulling shit out, you know.
Moss?
Because he was a drummer also, you know.
Yeah.
And that's part of something that we should talk about is after camp, how we used to get together to jam a lot.
Well,
that
was the point I was making, is I feel like you contributed not only to the listening of the music, but also the playing of the music. Like, all of a sudden, you had picked up the guitar, Alan picked up a guitar, I had played, but now all of a sudden, you know,
right,
I'll play a little bass.
Right, I forgot Pearl Singh was in the early jams. And also Russ and
you know,
Chris was there
out
also.
Figured out the strums and chords, you know.
Russ, Chris, and Dave Allen were also in some of the early jams.
They got into that. I know, they would play whatever they could pick up at times. You know?
My basement was set up for that.
I have a memory, I was at your house, right? And I don't know who the other guy that was there was, but some other guy. And I was just learning how to play guitar, and I just fucking learned how to play like the chords for like Sweet Jane or something. And I was playing it like,
that sounds
and
right.
You know when you're just finally figuring out how to do it, and you just sort of strum really hard because you want to make it. You think that you have to strum it hard to get the sound to come out.
It's like the Marty Levitt story.
And one of your friends is like, dude, you just lighten up. You don't have to strum so hard.
Is that Marty Levitt telling
you? It's the same fucking Marty Levitt story. It's
you were so
like,
busted.
You know what? It helped me mature as a terrible guitarist.
Right. You were one of the early ones to drop out of our jams from what I could remember.
I knew I never had musical
but
ability.
But Russell and those guys.
And
I just didn't see any reason to press that.
Russ of all, like he was into it though. Like even
Russ,
though
Russ, Chris, and Dave to me were like, always a team.
I remember when Russ would like pop on the keyboard and all of a sudden just start like doing whatever. And we're like, what are you doing, man? It was just like, well, he thought it sounded good at the time, I guess. But
well,
it wasn't
this is
quite
probably
working.
A great jam that, you know, the stories when all of us were there was probably only one or two times to really be honest and realistic. But do you guys remember Popkin Punch?
I do. Yeah.
I would really take
everything in my parents' liquor cabinet and refrigerator and put it into a bowl and then feed it to you guys. And we were still in camp or something, or the year later. Like, Russ and those guys, they were still in camp, I think. You know, they were 16 years old.
I remember a couple things I remember from, like, non-camp, like, you know, off-season time was being at your house, and I feel like we went to Schneider's house. And I feel like
that
was the first place I remember seeing cable TV. Like, what the fuck is this shit? Because where I live was still a little rural, so they didn't go out of their way to go lay the lines for the cable TV. And here I am in like Merrick. Merrick, is that where you're from?
Yes.
Merrick, and like, you know, you're like showing me how to like get the seeds out of weed up at your house with the double album thing.
I really taught you that, huh?
You did. It's like, I'm like, whoa, you just like pull it up and like.
Well, I guess someone taught me that too, right?
It's the natural progression of things. And then at Schneider's with cable, and like I always remember being from like central New Jersey, that like the Long Island and New York kids, like there was more shit going on. Like you were, you had more advanced.
But in Zurich, though, we had technology. Like for us, where Howie lived was like the Gold Coast is called.
Well, that was nice up there. Not that it wasn't nice where you were, but it wasn't as nice. You lived in a nice place.
No, Roslyn was very nice.
No, Roslyn and Greenneck and stuff, which is actually where Eddie lives now, in that exact area. Mm-hmm. Eddie. No.
Howie, did you have cable as early as Steve?
I don't think I had cable that early.
I don't remember getting cable as much as getting MTV. Like a year later, I had cable.
Like I saw the launch of MTV from your living room.
Oh, you watch it with me?
I was there for you. We did Video Killed the Radio Star.
I think I was there too for
in his living room, right?
Did you have like a tile floor?
How perfect is that?
Like, what kind of floor did you have? Was it carpet or carpeting? It was carpet. Whatever.
Also great. Doesn't change the reality. Coin a Scotsie.
You watch at my house?
Watched your house. And then watched it a bunch of other times. But the first time I ever saw it was at your house.
You were asking me before about like how I got from punk music into like loving every kind of music. And I really don't know. But I guess part of it was just playing music and listening to music. If you listen to The Clash, they're going to tell you about like Lynton Kwesi Johnson, for example. You know, I never heard of him before, but The Clash mentioned him, you know. And then I would go and get that album. Then I would read about him, and I'd learn about, you know, another guy.
Right, just pull
and
the
then
threads.
It would King Sunny Ade or whatever. And then it was the next thing.
King Sunny Ade.
Whatever the trajectory is, you know. Because I've gone through a lot of music like that, ethnic music. And then I saw that movie, you know, Buena Vista Social Club, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's like about 8 musicians, but every one of them has like 10 different bands, you know. Mm-hmm. All that kind of music. And then from jazz music, you know, like... Like when I met Kurt, if you guys remember, you know, my band Dissipated Face.
Kurt Face, whatever his
Kurt
name
Hologram
is.
And Ben Face.
Ben Face. Kurt what?
Kurt
Milligram?
Hologram. Kurt Hologram.
Hologram.
Kurt Milligram. He doesn't like it.
Kurt Milligram. I remember Ben Face, and I certainly remember Steve X Dream.
Right. Well, Dissipated Face just had their first
I see EP you posting
release.
That stuff. Yeah. What is that?
It was from 1986, and it just came out on a label this year.
The world's been waiting for however many years.
I remember
that is.
Seeing you guys in someplace in Jersey. I think, like maybe
yeah,
Jersey
we played
City,
a bunch
Hoboken.
In Jersey, because do you remember Bruce?
Yeah,
he used to like book us some shows in Jersey. But we played at CBGB's.
Bruce used to come
lot.
To your house when we jam, and he would read poetry. Like he'd
yeah,
be
he
he'd,
still
like
does.
He'd get the mic.
We
and,
just
yeah.
played recently. Yeah. He read poetry, yeah. Right. And he played hubcaps.
It's like oh,
but we like I met Kurt one day. He's like, okay, you got to learn about Miles Davis, Bitches Brew. It's a seminal album, but I never heard of it though. And you guys definitely never heard of it. No. This is around maybe 1981. And I heard it, and I was like, wow, this is so different. But this is like punk of jazz. This is like he said fuck you to jazz and just did what he wanted to and got whatever musicians he wanted to. And it was the most amazing thing I ever heard, you know, mm-hmm. basically. It was very like a
really?
You know, transitional album for me to hear that yeah. album. And he told me about a few other people, too, like Fred Frith and stuff that introduced me to guys like John Zorn and Bill Laswell and guys that I really got into in like the 80s and 90s and stuff.
Interesting.
But it all came from one from the next, you know, like Bill Laswell or whatever. He produced King Sunny Ade or Fela.
Well, like what Alan was saying before, like it's almost, you know, it's almost easy to do that now, like in the age of
right.
Rhapsody,
it's
where
you
get an algorithm.
Find it.
You get an algorithm that is suggesting things for you.
Yeah,
but for you to
just
be able
what other people looked at, basically. Now he had Steve actually had a research.
No, that's what I'm saying. He had actually
somehow,
put,
but
like,
it was all like
it.
A leapfrogging from one thing to the next. Like if you like read every Clash interview, which I did over and over again, you'll see they mentioned so many different bands. You know, like
right.
Lee Perry, just for example.
Well, Strummer had a radio show on the BBC that was
Paul Simonon was really into reggae. They, you know, Lee Perry produced one of their early singles. And then also they would mention him more than once, Scratchy Upsetter, this and that. And then you find out Lee Perry, this guy has like hundreds of albums. He produced Bob Marley. He produced The Clash. You know, he worked with millions of reggae people, every reggae person you could think of, Augustus Pablo, and, you know, endless Sly and Robbie. It was never ending, you know. So just if I learned about Lee Perry from The Clash, but from Lee Perry I learned about, you know, hundreds of groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. I like to weed out the bad
Eddie, are
stuff.
You still do you still like play a lot of music? Like are you still play guitar a lot? Do you pick it up a lot or no?
Yes, I play at home.
Just fucking around
with
for yourself.
My son is learning how to play guitar.
Oh, your son is? That's cool.
And just to goof around and have some fun. You know,
nice.
Certainly no aspirations.
No.
Now. And, you know, sometimes get together with Steve when he's...
How often do you guys see each other? Like, you know, you guys definitely back in L.A. were as close as Howie and I were, and we've maintained an amazing relationship. How about you guys? Have you been able
amazing.
To...
Amazing.
Like, don't you agree?
Yeah, look, we kept in touch all these years. And
yes,
we
of course,
see each
of
other.
Course.
You think it sucked?
Like, a few times a year.
It's okay.
It's average. How often do you guys get together?
Every few months, I would say. You know, we get together. Well, it takes us like 3 months of planning to get together for one time.
We just started, you know, I'm not saying for like all the years we've hung out consistently, but we started just hanging out and just bullshitting, and that's what led to this right now. Is like,
well, look, I mean,
it's
I
like
don't
the
see
oldest
how
way.
Then
it needs
often,
to be an event, you know.
But it
and
seems
now
like
we're psyched.
We,
we're so fucking happy when we know we're doing this later in the day.
If you
it's
have
like, what a fucking
time,
good day.
Amazing. Yeah, for us too. I mean,
free
on,
time.
Come
on.
You
can't find
like
fucking 2 hours, 3 hours of it.
But I don't see Howie that often. But I feel like I speak to him like once a week or something.
Right. I know.
Years.
We're in contact. I know.
All the time we talk, and then other, you know, I mean, and through electronic conversation mostly.
Which is good.
And then also in the 90s when I had my record store. We used to get together.
When you had the record store.
I mean, that was like
used
a separate.
To buy a lot of records.
That was a separate time in history where I would let Steve sort of be my sort of Columbia Record Club. I'd be like, all right, just do me a favor, like whatever CDs you think are good, just send them to me, and I'll, you know.
Yeah, he was like charging me $50
or fantastic.
A month or whatever.
I mean, you were the first guy to Sheryl Crow. Sheryl Crow was like a year before Sheryl Crow was Sheryl Crow. You were like, gotta listen
Pop
to Sheryl Crow.
Was pumping her.
He was.
Was
I mean, all
or
people
was just like shoved in there.
No, well, I think it was in there. I commented about it, and you were like, "Yeah, she's great."
Are you still? Like,
so there was a comment.
You know, I think I know what you do. What do you do now? Is it music related still?
No, I've been. Basically my trajectory was working in the record labels, and then in the 90s, I opened my record store, and then I had that from 90 to 97.
Okay.
Starting in 97, I was already doing DJ as a part time thing and weddings and such. And then I kind of amped it up to doing it full time.
So that's what you do a lot of now.
I do that, but it's full time. But it's kind of part time, full time, whatever.
Gotcha.
Makes me feel validated though. The guy was the biggest musical influence in my life.
I play music for people every night.
Committed to music
when I work. That's what I do. I just play the music. But one of my main specialties, and you might be able to guess this, is playing 80s music on music video for young kids, and they love it.
Did you find that like?
What do you mean on music video?
I play music videos, you know, on TV.
Okay.
On like in like you know, projections.
What's like? So what are like the songs you're constantly playing?
Like Should I Stay or Should I Go? Roxanne.
Okay, so it's like a little more.
That's like our era stuff, but then there's later 80s stuff like the Madonna, and then like right. Whitney Houston, Michael Jackson.
So you're
Jackson,
playing a video. You're
Born in the USA.
Putting the video on.
But imagine this really confined period of time where you were really making videos. For your songs.
They still make them now.
Yeah, but I don't think. Could
I think
they
make them on
the way
cheap,
they were making.
Well, look
they
at Blurred Lines, though. You guys know Blurred Lines.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Like a really hot video right now. It's like.
When
making,
you say it's a hot video, it's just like.
How many are there?
Every so often, there's a way to watch the song.
It was YouTube.
I agree.
It's true. It's true. YouTube. Right.
Whenever they
okay.
want to watch YouTube. But it helped make the song a hit, though, the video.
There was another song recently that I watched. I'm trying to remember on Vivo because they went out of their way to do like the not, you know, the unedited version of it.
Right.
And it was a video, and I was, you know, listen. I like watching the visual with music sometimes. I think it's a great way to watch it. But they're not committed
fun,
to it now.
But what I'm playing is the songs that were made for video, like The Buggles, Video Kill,
right,
the Radio
right,
Store,
right.
Erasure, The Cure, Duran Duran, Depeche Mode, and The Clash. And then the later
Duran
stuff.
Duran
like,
Duran.
Yeah, like Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. Or nothing's more iconic than that video, you know, for example.
Right,
people can
true.
Watch it
pulling
over and over
that
again.
Girl out of the crowd.
Courtney Cox, right?
Right.
It is Courtney Cox.
It is Courtney
cool.
Cox. And every time they see that, a third of the people are like, that's Courtney Cox. They don't. Yeah, you know,
a young Courtney Cox who's willing to be pulled out of the crowd. In
she's
the
very young,
video.
And it supposedly looks real, even though it looks very fake.
But you think that's real?
The 80s
all that's not
fake.
Like.
No, it was a casting thing, but it was supposed to look real, though.
So natural.
Because the original version.
Hey, lady. Let me stick my hand
but then
in the
he
ground.
Still does that.
Well, he does. And it's like.
He still does
there's
that.
There's a realness
to
it, but there's also the sort of. He has to sort of do this at this point because of the video. And, you know, they has right. to pull the person out of the stage to dance with, which, but you know, I guess it's nice.
I was in Ireland with my college buddies doing a golf trip, and Bruce was playing an hour away, and we didn't know. Huh. Does that seem bizarre? How cool would it have been to go. They were pumping up the fucking Rascal Flats, like in the town we were in. Like, I couldn't care less. Give me the tickets. I'm not seeing it. But I'm like, I was annoyed. I'm like, I'm not a huge Bruce fan, but I'm like, here I am in Ireland, an hour away. We would have gotten tickets. It would have been a great night.
Yeah, he's very absolutely. Popular in Europe.
I mean, popular yeah. everywhere. I was thinking,
everywhere.
Like, he's almost like. In rock and roll history, he's almost the most important figure at this point.
For live, you especially think? For live music.
Yeah, I mean, because McCartney and Lennon, they're still the Beatles. It's a team thing. And then Elvis. And then, but I don't know. I think Bruce at this point has sort of passed him. I think, and we know that, but I think it's like until Bruce, you know, passes on, knock on
right.
wood, whatever.
He puts it out night after
he's
night. I've never heard of him doing that show.
He's only in his late 50s, not at all.
No, he's in his
60s.
He's in his mid-60s.
He's in his 60s?
He's yeah. 63 or 64.
Looks good for 60s.
Looks great, man.
He looks great, but he works out like a madman. If you look at a picture of
whatever it is,
74 and 2004. You know, it's like
would you agree with me though? At this point, though, most important figure
for
in rock and roll history,
guys, I'd say of course.
And not even active, I think of all time at this point.
He's really up there, you know. Mm-hmm.
Who would you call the greatest performer of our time?
Joe Strummer.
If it's the greatest single performer
if
of our time.
It's our time. You're but saying he was our never, time.
But he wasn't a solo performer.
That was no, like I mean, the Clash, Joe Strummer in The Clash. It was the greatest performances I ever saw.
Bombs, I love that. The energy the Palladium, of those shows Asbury was fucking shake. Insane. The energy was insane.
They never played the album version. They always like made it new, and Mick Jones always had a new instrument, you know. And then even
is
when
that
they,
the band you've seen more than any other band?
Probably not.
Who would you say you've seen the most? Gil Scott Heron?
No, but I've seen
him. Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
That guy got so much love when he passed.
I helped get him signed.
He was just like this, like jazzy kind of.
Did I used rappy. To play him to you guys?
No, I've seen him. You know, he always played that.
That's Whitey on the Moon, right?
He's a great guy. I used to really like him.
Anyway, yeah.
He's in the car the last time I was in the car, and it came on, like, rough shuffle play. Whitey on the Moon. The Clash. The band I see the most probably is Phil Lesh, I would say.
You know, okay.
Because it's the kind of thing that you see a lot. But also, one of my favorite bands is Modesky Martin and Wood. Which I've seen a lot.
Never even
like
heard of
times.
Them. Modesky Martin,
MMW, John Modesky. You know, you can look them up. They're pretty.
Well, I know I can. But what are they like? What type of music?
It's like jazz. It's like rock played by jazz guys. Right. They crossed over into a jam band.
You know
thing.
What? It
sounds a little Steely Danish
they
to me.
They play straight. Well, maybe Mark could like work it into the fade out of music at the end. But they're a really great band. They have at least 7 or 10 albums. I've probably seen them about, as a guest, like 30 times.
What about you, Eddie? What are you listening to these days? Is there someone at my door?
There is.
Oh, my son. All right. He's allowed to come. We're going to break right now. We're going
to
take a quick break.
I have been listening to most of the old stuff. We're going to take a break.
What's up?
Alan's son.
What's your name? Hey, Olivia. Hey. I'm too much.
Hey.
All right. We're back. So my son just walked in with a friend of his I've never met. Nice girl. All right. Anyway.
So Martin Modesky.
No, we're talking about Eddie's family.
Oh.
Eddie.
I still listen to the same stuff that we always listen to.
Beyond the same stuff, anything new that you've started listening to?
Guys like Ian Hunter, what he does now these days. Okay. Willie Nile.
Willie Nile?
Yeah, he's a favorite.
Grandpa.
Hey, you keep posting about him, right?
Okay. You know, older guys that just like great tunes.
That are just putting nothing new, though. There's our pizza. We're going to hold for one more second.
We're holding on again.
All right.
No, I do want to give a plug to Willie Nile because he's
Willie
like
Nile
a...
Willie Nile it is.
But he's seen Willie Nile a lot.
Yeah,
saying,
I love the guy, and he plays like great music, and he's sort of caught on in the last like 3 albums in the last 10 years, and one of his big fans is Bruce Springsteen. And I've seen them play together a couple of times. And he just always puts on a great show, basically. I never heard anyone say that they didn't have a good time seeing him. But,
is he playing in the area anytime soon?
Yeah, he is. He plays a lot in New York and Westchester and stuff. I'm
trying to remember who Willie Nile is. Like, I don't really...
He was on Arista.
Did he ever have any songs that made it big?
Vagabond Moon. He was like, if you listen to Meg Griffin, you'll hear Willie Nile.
To Meg Griffin? You mean from the...
For example.
Radio TJ and like...
P. Fornatel. Like, if P. Fornatel's like Funeral, you know... Willie Nile played.
Okay.
Yeah, he was part of that FUV kind of crowd. I know you used to listen to FUV.
Yeah, I did.
Isn't Meg Griffin from Family Guy?
I don't know.
Is this a different Meg Griffin?
It's funny. I never put two and two together. It's true. Meg Griffin was a DJ.
Griffin.
And then it's like, wait, you're right. It's the
Mila
guy.
Kunis, who does Meg Griffin on Family Guy?
Remember Meg Griffin? She was on K-Rock. She followed Howard Stern.
You know what I do, actually.
But before that, she was on WPIX. You guys remember that station? 101.1 or something? It was from Elvis to Elvis, 78. And it was the first station I ever played New Wave in New York.
I was into Paco on KTU, man.
I used to like Push in the Bush.
There you go.
But what about WLIR? I mean, that was influential.
That was something you guys had. I didn't have that. That wasn't at my disposal.
LIR was like perfect in terms of the timing. I'm like, okay, we're going
to
do
They
like
changed
New
from
Wave,
Hot Tuna to like the Eurythmics.
It was
like
the
overnight.
Perfect time. Screamer of the Week and all British.
So, Steve... It's been awesome having you and Eddie
on. Our clues is
at it
again.
I'm the good segue guy.
What a reunion. Let's face it.
This has been awesome.
This is cool, man.
We've loved having you guys here. I think that many of the Swagoites who didn't know us, you, they didn't know me, any of us, got a chance to peek into one of the last L8s.
Do you guys remember when Eddie and I had to run the marathon?
Yes.
Yeah,
Eddie was
under
protesting because he twisted his ankle because he was like
still
jogging.
Eddie was so principled about that, though.
He
was
got into jogging. We both got into jogging, but it only lasted like 3 days. And then him and Moss would jog every night.
Remember that? Well, Swedlow. It was Swedlow that took you jogging, wasn't it?
And then we had to run the marathon, and because he was injured, they made him do it, but then he just walked.
Yeah, it was Stanfield. You know, a great guy, but this particular day, he was unreasonable. I told him I couldn't do it.
That would happen.
He changed Stan the out. Order of the marathon and with me out of it. He wouldn't hear it. So I walked. That's all I could do.
You do what you got to do. You do what you
got
to do.
He got the song, The Beast of Burden, and Eddie wouldn't walk
there was
his
a
feet or hurt it.
Yeah, the rabbits, yeah.
Was the marathon part of the Apache Relay, or was it part of Color War, or was it something different?
No, the
marathon
was
a relay race.
But was that it part of part Color War?
It was part of Color War, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Because
it was
all I remember was some guy in a car dropped me and Eddie off in the field and left us
right,
there.
And you're supposed to wait for the
by
guy
ourselves,
to run up to you and
no
go.
No supervision whatsoever.
No.
Yeah, but it was far away.
Yeah, it wasn't so bad, but it was definitely out of the camp.
It was a pretty broad. We went pretty far away from the camp. You go all the way up to not that far, but it was a mile
Eddie,
and a half or 2 miles.
I had to ask
away.
Eddie if I could run or I had to walk in protest, but he said I could run because he was so mad he didn't care if his team won. So I walked with him in protest for like a block, and then I ran.
And then Eddie took it full route, and that was it. I mean, there was no way of coming back from that.
One other thing too is that you talked on an earlier podcast about shooting guns in Sweigo.
Oh, did you ever shoot him?
Yeah, I was in the Apache Relay for 2 years. My thing was the biathlon. I had to get the thing from somewhere near the office and run to the rifle range. So I was running and then shooting.
Oh, it was?
Then I had to shoot a bullseye. And it's 1 year I did it in one shot, and 1 year I did it in, I think, 3 shots. But there was a rifle counselor. He was like a tennis counselor. But he was in the younger bunks, and he was kind of Puerto Rican, this guy. I don't know if anyone remembers this guy. You might remember. He was real
I don't remember.
He was a real urban guy.
Okay.
He was totally cool. I wish I remembered his name. But he was totally different than any other counselor there. He was a Brooklyn guy who was Latino. Mm-hmm. And he was the rifle coach. So anytime I wanted to shoot, I would find out when he was off on periods. And we'd go into Dave's house. In the back of Dave's house was like some kind of room with gear in it. You guys remember this?
No.
I think it's where they stored the jackets.
Yeah,
Color
I remember.
Jackets.
I knew about the room, but I don't.
Because I went there when I went to Sweigo recently, and I found Color War, you know, S's.
No, we raided that as well.
Yeah. So you go into that room, and in that room, it was like 24 rifles and just boxes of 22 shells. And you could take a whole box. A box was probably like 48 shots and just take it.
So it wasn't BBs. It was
no, they were 22s. It was a real rifle. It was old, you know. It was from the 50s or Boy Scouts, maybe even the 30s, you know, when Sweigo started. Mm-hmm. But we would take it. I had the supervision of this guy somehow. He had the key. But it turned out he was the rifle judge for the biathlon, but he was also on my team. So I got it in one shot. Then we looked at
it's
it.
It's a good advantage to have.
Yeah, both things
working for you.
I mean, it was nothing I can imagine today. You know?
Eddie, what did you do in the Apache Relay? What was your like? Did you have like a few years you were there? Did you have a specific thing?
No, I think it was different each time. I have to admit, I had trouble hammering those nails in when I was an Eagle.
That was your thing. They made you like get like 10 nails in all the way in or something.
Did you have a thing?
I had one. They always, you know, for the right reasons. I always did like the. I think there was either like 3 top of the key shots in a row or 10
right
free throws in a row. Yeah,
of course. You're not going to put a junior.
I did basketball shit, as it should be.
I think
be.
I had to catch a baseball 1 year that somebody threw up high.
Gotcha.
Something like that.
Well, most of the events in the other than burning the rope and sailing across the lake, most of them were pretty.
Kayaking was a bitch.
Yeah, there was like, I would say of like the whole like array of events that there were, there was like 5 or 10 of them that were truly fucking a pain in the ass and hard.
They were hard.
The rest of them were just like mundane.
Well, it was for little kids.
It didn't matter. It was interchangeable.
Was there a bed making thing? We had to carry.
There was that. You had to dump it, make
you had
it.
To carry.
How about
it
we had to drink a quart of milk? Like that
did you have to pee?
That seemed difficult. I don't know. You just had to drink a quart of milk.
I wanted to be tapped.
Can't
be
good for your cholesterol.
No.
You know, I wanted to be tapped for the rope 2 years, and I never.
What does that mean?
You
the
never
rope?
Got to do the
to
rope.
Be the rope burner. Like it was under the control of the leader.
You know,
so
that was
the highest level.
I have to say that was like this thing that you. It was kind of like current politics. Like, all right, Hillary, you haven't been voted in for president.
But you can burn the rope.
You'll be Secretary of State.
Right.
So it's very similar. It's like, all right, Gotz,
it was
Jeff
Gottlieb and Matt Roseman.
You didn't win. You didn't get appointed a color war leader. We'll let you do the rope.
But I made it clear I knew how to make a fire, though. And they just wouldn't let me do it.
What
they did
on?
Let me shoot
Jeff
the gun.
Jeff Gottlieb did
what
the most failed, the most failed rope burn
okay,
ever. Did we discuss this on the podcast about the most failed rope burn ever?
No.
Yeah,
Jeff Gottlieb decided that there was a new strategy that he was going to employ. So for those who don't know, you have a rope about 8 foot high. You have to build teepee sort of out of wood to get the flame up and burn the rope. And Jeff decided somehow that just like a little bit of kindering and a couple of teepees would torch the flame up to the top.
He had it sketched out.
But you really needed like four or five like layers
of
teepee.
Three teepee.
And he's trying to do
teepee.
It with two. Radical. Did not work. And listen, he was not appointed a color leader and he failed miserably at the rope burn. But other than that, he was a real contributor.
He was a good man, Gottlieb.
He knew how to make a fire, but he had strategy. Though. Awesome. I remember he sketched it out on a piece of paper.
He did.
But what about Matt Roseman? He was like the true pyromaniac of our generation.
He was, right?
When I met him, he had already been like kicked out of camp for making a pipe bomb or something.
Yeah, he was stealing gasoline from the gas tank, I remember, at one point.
Yeah.
How do you not, you know?
He put it into a tennis can.
Right,
so,
right.
As I heard. And then he tried to blow up the treehouse, which is someplace we barely knew about.
It's like a terrorist act.
Where was the game?
There was a treehouse in the woods somewhere. You must remember. There was a game we played where the kids had to find us, the younger kids.
Hide and seek.
Well, there was the senior hunt.
A senior hunt.
Really? And what are you guys talking about?
Yes.
Senior
hunt. And that's where Gottlieb would be like.
It was sort of similar to Gold Rush, where like the seniors would hide and the younger kids would run and catch you.
But
it was weird. You could be worth positive points or negative points.
Right.
So
found more
you might you may as well just hang back and not do anything.
It's highly likely I laid on my bed in L.A. during
this. And you just got found because you probably were negative.
What the fuck was that?
0 points.
No, I would go. Matt Roseman took me to the treehouse.
I wasn't playing.
That's what I'm saying. It was just the object.
But they knew that, so they're like, we're not going to affect
the kids' scores.
Yeah,
even in the treehouse,
they want to be found.
What about the senior party?
Then I think they parlayed that into like casino night. Like, didn't the currency you earned in senior hunt turn into your chips?
It was like
in casino
transferable
night?
your equity. That
I think
you built
that was
up
the evening activity that followed.
I remember canteen money, but
I thought casino night was a disappointment.
It never lived up. I thought the Marine Ball
most of the
what about the Sadie Hawkins?
Most of the coordinated events were not. Did not live up to their
square dancing.
Their billing.
Square dancing.
Other than square dancing, Lou Flago.
Lou Flago brought it.
Montego Bay.
But the Marine Ball sucked, man. That thing, like every year, was like, what? What are we doing?
Why was it called the Marine Ball? Was
because you were in the social hall instead of our
sailor?
Canteen.
Like, did I come in the sailor?
Exactly.
What's the Marine Ball about?
I'm back, baby.
Oh man, good stuff, man.
All right, well,
so
listen.
Great. We're gonna
eat some pizza.
Eat some pizza.
Conclude for the eve.
Thank our friends, our guests, Steve Popkin.
Thanks for inviting me.
Family.
It's been awesome having you guys here
and
on
Howie.
Ski Slope. And
pleasure.
Peace out. Another great episode.
Wait. Thank you, guys. Great to be with you.
All right.
Whack. Great episode, dude.
Excellent.
We're out later.
See ya. Peace. Boom.